coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody, and happy Tuesday night. Hope everybody is doing okay. I hope everybody in the Northeast and on the coasts and everything are able to avoid the drone traffic. Our second spot tonight. This is going to be a long episode, folks, just so you know. In our first segment, we are welcoming James Shuvsky to talk about cryptids in the Columbia River Gorge, specifically the Klickitat ape cat, as well as others. We'll be talking about his amazing arcane adventure maps, things like that. The second spot is where it gets funky, because we actively, as you know, the second spot is always pre-record guest, folks. Because we don't, if we go long with the first guest, we don't want to keep a guest waiting in the wings, things like that. However, last Wednesday, we got with our friend Anthony Esemplea from Epic TV New York. His videos were going viral all over the place of the drones in New Jersey. News agencies were contacting him from all over the world. And we did our pre-record about the New Jersey drones. And at the end of it, I was like, you know, man, guaranteed by the time this hits, this is going to be an 180 degree different story than what we just did, you know. And sure enough, by the time Sunday came around, I contacted him and was like, Anthony, do you have time to get together Tuesday morning at like noon? You know, like, let's get together at noon about 8 hours before the show and let's do a recap of this, because guaranteed by then we're going to be having hearings. We're going to be having Senate hearings, things. And lo and behold, Senate hearings happened today about the drone situation. Things about radiation have come out, all that kind of stuff. And then in the midst of it, his own video, which him and his research partner did CGI with to make tracer rounds, come out like a dude was shooting at a drone to show like what not to do, and very clearly marked as CGI, started making the rounds on social media and in the news as though it was actually real. So I was like, you definitely need to come back on. So you're going to have a two-part second part, folks. The first part is from Wednesday, the actual first conversation, so that you have reference. And then the second part is today with all of the updates, everything that we called on Wednesday that's all come to fruition, as well as all of the outflow from what's happening from this, and literal news agencies showing his video of the tracers being fired at a drone, claiming it's real when it's absolutely not real. It's CGI. So what the impact of things like that is, that's our second part. Once again, in our first part, we are very, very happy to welcome James Shuvsky. He is the creator of the Arcane Adventure Map. You can find everything out about that at margiesoutdoor.com. They have a great, great listing here of all kinds of paranormal stuff from the Columbia River Gorge. James is a former volunteer search and rescue EMT, wildlife firefighter, a mountain guide. He is also a researcher into these topics in his area. Welcome to the show, James. How are you doing this evening?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, it's going to be an amazing night of show, and I am very excited to get into this because the Northwest is a beautiful, amazing area, and also an area that is really, really rife and wrought with cryptids and paranormal and portals and strange energy vortices, things like that. So tell us a little bit about yourself, James. How did you first come to the world of being a search and rescue EMT, things like that. I think that's really the first part of the story, because that's kind of what got you out into this region to begin with and exploring this region in the depth that you do.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was 19, I joined the military at a highly experimental Cold War infantry unit. And that brought me out to the Northwest. And, you know, I fell in love with Washington State. You had mentioned that this place is rife with all kinds of stuff. Washington is the number one state for UFO sightings per capita and for Bigfoot sightings per capita. Yep. And so I've always been out in the wilderness exploring, doing outdoor kinds of stuff. And I had been to the Columbia River Gorge a number of times. But in 2021, my mother-in-law passed away, and she owned some businesses down here. And my wife and I decided to carry on those family businesses. And so we moved down, and one of the stores was sort of a convenience type of store, but it needed some help. Margie had started it when she was sick. And so because I have all this outdoor experience, we made it an outdoor adventure store. So we have climbing ropes and backpacks and awesome. That kind of stuff. And the gorge is a place that's just perfect for that. So it's 80 miles. It was the country's first national scenic area. The Columbia River is the largest river in North or South America that flows into the Pacific Ocean, and it cuts straight through the Cascade Mountains. And so out here, we have over 90 named waterfalls. Some of them are 600 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
We have three stratovolcanoes within 35 miles of my store. We have, there's well over 400 caves in the area. The west side of the mountains are a traditional sort of mysterious and brooding classic Pacific Northwest rainforest that sees over 100 inches of rain a year. But the east side of those mountains, and my store sort of sits right on the boundary there, is a high plains desert. So austere and beautiful and almost spiritual in many ways. And out there you'll find, you know, like desert mesas with flat tops and channeled scab lands. And just from an adventure standpoint, you know, there's everything from rock climbing to mountaineering to whitewater rafting. A lot of folks do windsurfing out here on the Columbia River Gorge. I mean, it is an adventurous wonderland. And I thought that we were pretty lucky to have, you know, had some good businesses out here that we could run as a family. Well, on sort of a whim, I put a Sasquatch in part of our logo. And when we sort of reopened the store into its new format, tons of people started coming in and spontaneously telling us stories about, you know, these unusual experiences they're having in the wild reaches of the Columbia River Gorge. And we were hearing about Sasquatch. We were hearing about UFOs and portals, little people, apparitions and ghosts, glowing orbs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seemed like everyone that we talked to either had some kind of unusual experience or knew someone who had an unusual experience. And so I put up a big sign in the window that read "File paranormal reports here." And I gave really specific instructions to all the employees. And I said, we are going to be a safe place for ordinary people to talk about their extraordinary experiences. And we are going to treat everyone who comes in with dignity and respect. We're going to ask them intelligent follow-up questions. We're going to act as though whatever they're telling us, no matter how outlandish it may seem at face value, we're going to trust these witnesses and hear them out and listen to what they have to say. And we're not going to insert what we believe they saw onto their experience.
Yeah.
And so, and I knew that this was important. I knew that stigma prevents people from filing reports or talking about these unusual experiences. And I think that's a hindrance to our understanding of the natural world.
Yes.
You know, if people are afraid to talk about their experiences, we can't study it and we can't understand it. Well, now here we are. That program has been running for about 3.5 years. We are over 380 reports in. We just got 4 this week, in fact.
Wow.
And if you do the math, it's sort of like a new Scooby-Doo mystery walks through our door, you know, a couple, 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, this has been one of the most joyful, rewarding and satisfying experiences I've ever had. And it's just been amazing to be right here where these things are happening. You know, we'll get reports that are, you know, a quarter of a mile away from the store. Like, these things are happening, like, right in our backyard. And it's just been the connection we've made with the local people here is amazing. And the things that we're hearing about are just astonishing. And we can get into that in some detail, but I think that sort of gives folks a little bit of a sense of who I am and how I got into this position of being sort of the nucleus of all this astonishing information.
Yeah, the local purveyor of tales and the trusted person that people come to, which in a community is hugely important, especially a community like that. You know, you mentioned something very important, and that is people's reticence to share experience. And there's one thing that we try to drive home all the time with Curious Research, and that is the idea that science begins with an experience. We wouldn't have the theory of gravity if an apple didn't fall on Newton's head. Like, if he didn't have an experience that led down the trail of, like, well, what caused that? We would have no theory of gravity. So, and the idea, even coming at it from a search and rescue standpoint, if everybody that you rescued was reticent to tell you how they got lost, you wouldn't be able to help anybody not get lost. You wouldn't be able to tell them what they need to bring with them, what they need to look out for. Make sure not to do this. You know, like, make sure not to leave your camping party, like, things like that, you know? So when people are reticent to share, we can't grow a larger field of data for a topic.
You know, it's funny. The idea of science talks about, you know, the scientific method and being intellectually curious, and that the data leads to theories. The data shouldn't, theories shouldn't exclude data, right? Like, and I think a lot of scientists, they have some really strong vested interest. You know, there's professional reputation and funding and, you know, the way that they're trained and all these kind of things leads them to actually be antithetical to intellectual curiosity. But that, to me, is one of the most exciting things about what's happening in places like the Gorge. Citizen scientists, like scientists, academic scientists, have more or less abandoned this phenomenon, these experiences that people are having. And they've left it up to people like me, who are self-funded and are intellectually curious and are willing to entertain ideas outside of the mainstream theories. And so it's a golden age for citizen scientists. Like, this is a field where you're not going to bump into people in the field telling you can't research that, or, you know, this is my turf and you need to get out of here. And what's really fun is that all the other researchers that I've met, and, you know, a lot of folks come through and visit, it's such a friendly community. Like, there are so many folks who are willing to help each other out and give each other a hand. And it's all really based on this intense curiosity and interest in our natural world. And we can see the limitations. Like, obviously, science, as materialism is practiced, is very effective.
Sure.
But we all know that there are holes in that. And if you think about the way science works, it is often the last to know. Like, it's going to be citizens having experiences in the field that are reporting these things. And then science has got to go through its whole process of verification and, you know, debating. And, you know, there's entrenched viewpoints and, you know, you have to go through that whole process. But really, it's for individuals, the most important thing I can tell you is that don't doubt that you're having an extraordinary experience. Like, a lot of people normalize it. They'll talk themselves out of it.
Yep.
And if they don't talk themselves out of it, their friends and relatives will.
Rapidly. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many folks tell me that I am the second person they've told in 20 years and 30 years and 10 years. Because the first person they told laughed at them, or, you know, told them they're crazy or they're on drugs or whatever else.
Yep.
And yet, even 20 years later, an experience that lasted, you know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 20 seconds is still one of the most important memories that they have.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, one of the, like I said, one of the most satisfying, rewarding, joyful parts about this is connecting with these people and hearing them tell their stories and seeing the relief on their face that someone is taking them seriously and not dismissing them out of hand immediately.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And you know, the idea of science coming on board with this, number one, it's a hugely diverse biosphere up there. So I'm sure that there is tons of scientific research being done in different ways. But it is interesting to see science once again taking, kind of coming back to some of this. Even the idea
it's getting
changing
to the point where
things,
they can't deny it.
Well, even changing things from UFO to UAP, once again, lands things, and we say it all the time, like there's a lot of people that don't like it, but it lands it in the backyard of science because the job of science is to eliminate the phenomena from the experiment. The prime example that I give is this awesome series of books that I have that is an actual scientific desk reference printed last time in 1974, a year before my birth, called Strange Phenomenon, Strange Universe, Strange Planet. Like, these things are literally, like, this one right here is just all kinds of stuff like lighted swamp gas in the air and articles that date back to, like, 1680, 1700, things like
that. That sounds so cool.
So it's like, oh, wait, okay, well, here's something that may kind of match what you're talking about that gives you a launching point scientifically, or at least gives you, you know, like, it's wicked cool. But that is an actual scientific desk reference of phenomena. To exclude from your experiments, to exclude from things like
really?
That.
They want you to exclude that.
Well, it's the idea of like, okay, well, here's what happens. Here's different effects of the planet Venus whenever you observe it. Things like that.
Oh, you know?
So it's things that you can go back and reference and go, I remember hearing something like that about an article about ball lightning. Let me go look that up. And there's like 85 different little clippings of articles from ball lightning stuff where it's like, here's a paragraph that was written from Missouri in 1785.
Now you're making me jealous. I wish I had those books.
Things like that.
Desk.
It's wicked. I found them at a MUFON show at a big book sale. It was like, oh, my God. But the thing is, that's what science is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And when you start talking about cryptids specifically, cryptozoology is a big one for me because it's like, no, we have discovered so many species. We discover on average 1,500 a year. Mm-hmm. We didn't believe that the lowland gorilla was an actual thing.
Exactly.
It took us 85 years from the time of us hearing about it to the time that we found it.
I'll
and
do you
the
one
natives
better than
knew
that.
It was real.
There
the
were
whole time.
Reports of those gorillas back in Roman times. So you're talking about 2,400 years of field reports of these creatures and science saying, nope, doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Komodo dragons. Same thing with the platypus. They even dissected a platypus and determined it was a clever hoax. And so, like, science has got its own momentum, its own social structure. It's a human endeavor. Of course, these are people doing their best. But they're coming at it from sort of a colored point of view. And they pretend that they're completely objective, but they're human beings like the rest of us.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, it's so, like, for instance, Sasquatch, where Washington State has got tons of Sasquatch sightings and the Gorge has got tons of Sasquatch sightings for Washington State. And in fact, Skamania County, which is a part of the Washington side of the Gorge, was the first governmental body in the world to enact a Bigfoot protection legislation.
That's right. That's right.
And if you kill a Bigfoot in Skamania County, and it's the coroner determines it's a humanoid, you'll be charged with manslaughter. So we're not fooling around out here. And so we were getting all of these amazing reports, you know, and tons of Sasquatch reports, pretty clear. But then we started getting reports of this big black cat. And the first guy that came in, you know, it took him a while to work up the courage. And he was orienteering, you know, probably 3 miles west of the store and in an area called Buck Creek. His compass started acting strange. Now, for the Gorge, that's not entirely unusual. When you look at the government issued navigation maps, there are bright pink letters on them that say, warning, your compass readings will be off here.
Yeah. You're in a very volcanic area. So,
yeah. And it is one of the most unique electromagnetic environments in the world. We have all kinds of crazy things that go on out here. There are certain areas where compasses are almost useless. And so he then said that he saw across the creek a big black cat watching him. Now, of course, we have cougar here. That's they're actually fairly common. But the thing to know about cougars is that they are terrified of humans, and they will abandon a fresh kill just at the sound of human voices.
Yeah.
And so this thing stood there and looked at him. It was sitting on the other side of the river and didn't run away. So that's the first sign to me that, okay, we've got something weird going on here. Then it's black in color. So cougars, when they express their melanin, they go from like a tawny tan color to a red color. But there is no scientific evidence that cougars can be black.
Yeah, that they're fully melanistic in any kind of way. They can have a little bit of black tinge on their tail, a little bit on their saddle, mm-hmm. stuff like that as they get older. But, you know, yeah. much like any
you're never
cat,
gonna see like
their fur darkens. But
yeah, fully black one. So those are two, you know, I've been in the wilderness. Those are two sort of like, okay, he's got something unusual here. And then he said, and the creature was enormous. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, like 4 to 5 feet tall at the shoulder. And
whoa.
I was like, whoa, that is remarkable, because a cougar's maybe 24, big ones, 26, 28 inches at the shoulder.
Yeah.
Tiger
yeah.
might be 36 inches at the shoulder. And tigers are considered the largest cat on earth today. But this thing is, you know, anywhere between, you know, 48 to 60 inches tall at the shoulder. So just enormous in size. And so we talked about that a bit. And, you know, I'm, of course, doing my level best to take in the data and not put any judgments on it. And they said, and James, the strangest thing was that it had a face that looked like a monkey. And so that one kind of threw me for a loop.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What do you mean? And he said, well, it had intelligent ape-like eyes, and there was no fur on its face, and its snout was kind of shortened. And I thought, wow, that is a – I can't even begin to imagine, you know, what that might be. I do know that there are Native American legends about a race of supernatural panther protectors. They're called the Meshepeshu. And one of the descriptions of these creatures and is that they look like a black panther with the face of a man. But, you know, that's a, you know, it's part of the Native American traditions. And whenever they're called underwater panthers because they come from the underwater realm. And whenever Native yeah. Americans talk about things coming from the sky realm or the underwater realm or the earth realm, they're saying that this thing has 1 foot in the physical world and yeah. 1 foot in the spirit world. And so, like, that's the only reference I can make out for that. Now, fast forward to today, we've had over 130 reports of a big black cat. And for us, it counts as a Klickitat ape cat sighting if it is feline in body structure, it's got black fur, and it's got a long tail. And so we've had 130 accounts. About half of them describe this enormous size. So 4 to 5 feet tall at the shoulder, between 900 and 1300 pounds. And then only a handful of the reports say that it's got this monkey-like face. And, you know, I'll go back and forth in my own mind thinking, you know, is this a reporting error? Is it a trick of light? Is the creature maybe sick and has got mange or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
And so, you know, or maybe we're dealing with multiple creatures, or maybe it's some kind of shape-shifting thing. I honestly don't know, but I do know that just about the time that I start to doubt, like, I don't know if this monkey face thing is real, another credible witness will come in, like a fire crew chief from a wildland firefighting team will come in and say, yep, me and the whole team saw that thing when we were fighting fires between Mount Adams and Mount St. Helens. And on a 3-day deployment, we wondered what we were going to do if it showed up in our camp. So it's a part of the story. And of course, many of these sightings happened in Klickitat County, which is where my store is located. And so hence the name Klickitat Ape Cat. So I was really fascinated by this story. And the next day I came in and was talking to my employees about it. We got a really interesting story last night, a really interesting report. And as I described the creature, one of my employees who I've known for years, Missy, she started shaking. She was having like this visceral, emotional reaction to the description of this cat. And she's a honest woman, really super likable, super nice. And I said, Missy, what's going on? She said, James, I saw that thing myself. I was driving down Klickitat Canyon at dawn, and I saw it walk along the side of the road. And I stopped my car and watched it, and she didn't get a look at its face, but said it was huge. It was gigantic. She had never seen a cat that big before. And, of course, I'd never seen a black cat here in Washington State. The only black cats in North America are black jaguars, and their range is 1,000 miles south of here in, like, southern Arizona, New Mexico.
Yeah, and it's a pretty – it's not a huge range either.
Yeah.
They're mainly from Mexico.
Exactly. And she thought that maybe she should get out of her car and tell the people who lived in the houses nearby that there's a giant black cat, you know, prowling around their property or near their property. She decided not to do that. And it's kind of a good thing that she didn't. Because when she told her family about it, you know, her trusted group of, you know, support group, the people that, you know, you go to when you're trying to make sense of the world, they kind of nervously laughed. They told her that's impossible and that she probably didn't see a cat. What she probably saw was a cow. So first of all, that gives you a sense of just how big of a creature she's describing, right?
Yeah.
A creature the size of a cow. But it also shows how people so want to normalize experiences. And it's like if you were in your hometown and you saw a red Lamborghini drive through town and you're like, oh my God, hey dudes, I just saw a red Lamborghini. And your friend said, yeah, well, Lamborghinis are pretty rare. What you probably just saw was a red minivan and you were mistaken. Like, it's insane to think that you, an adult, wouldn't know the difference between a cow and a cat. But again, and you can't blame people. Like, this is your natural defenses.
Sure.
Life is hard enough. You don't need giant black cats running around. So between these two people, the original reporting witness happened to be a friend of the family, someone that Margie had helped out before we moved down there,
okay,
before she died. And Missy, of course, is someone that I knew and trusted very well. So to me, these were credible reports. And so, you know, the store's got a radio advertising budget. And so we, you know, put up some ads on the radio. Has anyone seen a big black cat? We put up some signs at the trailheads. And we were flooded with reports.
Wow.
I mean, people were coming in all over the place. And we've had multiple law enforcement officers come in and say that they've seen this cat. We've had reports that go back all the way to 1968. We have reports of the creature with younglings, so kittens and cubs. So it's a what seems to be a reproducing population. And
interesting.
Quite a bit of reports. And some of the encounters are pretty brief. Like, yeah, I was riding my ATV and this giant black cat jumped across the trail and scared the crap out of me, and I never saw it again. So, like, to me, that counts as one of those 130 reports that we've had.
Yeah.
Other people will say that they were driving in the mountains. The thing jumped into the road in front of their car. It was as tall as their like Ford Escort and then jumped off. Other people say they've seen it in the road. It was as tall as the hood of their Jeep Renegade.
Wow.
And so really big. And like I said, about 50% of the reports talk about this enormous size. And the rest of the reports say just a really big, muscular cat. So pretty much a head scratcher. I looked into the fossil record, and there is a creature called the Panthera atrox. It was a North American lion, lived here in all over North America, including Washington State, said to have gone extinct 10,000 years ago as the Ice Age ended. And it's a creature incredibly well known to science. They pulled over 80 skeletons of this thing out of the La Brea tar pits down in Los Angeles.
Yep.
What's interesting about this creature, and we have one of these replica skulls in the store, is that it matches the size and weight of the creature that is being reported here in the gorge. And interestingly, the creature is sexually dimorphic, which means the females are much smaller than the males. And what that means is that if you had a sample of 130 reports, you'd expect half of them to be small and half of them to be really big.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that this is a Panthera atrox. What I am saying is that it is definitely genetically possible for cats to be this big, and that cats this big lived alongside human beings in fairly recent geologic history, less than 10,000 years ago. Yep. But again, we don't know what it is and or where it comes from or anything about it. You know, for all we know, it could be an escaped exotic pet that has managed to, you know, thrive out here in the Pacific Northwest.
And you know, I guess at that point, if somebody had an escaped exotic pet, you know, it's not like it wouldn't be a hard stretch for any kind of exotic large cat to possibly crossbreed with a cougar.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
In all realization, it's not like you're talking about crossbreeding a cat and a dog or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it would be interesting. And you know, the really interesting thing is how far back sightings go,
mm-hmm.
you know, all the way back to the late '50s, early '60s with mm-hmm. these, right?
So, you know, I've been doing a ton of research, like why in the heck are we getting like over 100 reports of this giant creature? And like, I'll be like getting my tires changed and talking to the young lady behind the counter, and she'll ask me about my rig. I've got a sort of a paranormal investigation vehicle. It's got, you know, big logos on and everything. And I will describe this case. Oh yeah, I saw the thing when I was 12 years old over in Dufour on the Oregon side of the river. And so people who aren't even, you know, coming in, there's my rig. Yeah. It's the cryptid, and, it's got, you know, cameras and, you know, thermal imagers. And
heck yeah.
And it's super fun. but, anyway, so we've heard so many stories about it. And, now, upriver from us is a place called the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. And so it was a part of the Manhattan Project. And what Hanford was, so during World War II, everyone knows that down in Los Alamos, the Oppenheimer and his physicists were designing the bomb. But they needed a site where they could actually build an industrial scale nuclear reactor, the first in the world, to forge the plutonium that would be used to fuel the bombs. And what they did was they took over a 600 square mile area. They evicted all of the people living there, including the Native Americans and the, you know, pioneer families that had settled out there. Mm-hmm. And it's along 45 miles of the Columbia River. They needed that water for cooling and for cooling the reactor. There's some hydroelectric dams that are providing power, and it's super remote, right? And I thought, well, right now, the place closed down in the 80s. While it was operational, they had a total of 9 nuclear reactors running there during the Cold War. Closed down in the 80s after they produced enough plutonium to create 60,000 nuclear weapons. It was one of our most important nuclear sites.
Yep.
But now it is without a doubt the country's biggest Superfund cleanup site. Because not only is there nuclear waste out there, there's a ton of chemical strippers that they use. So, like, it is a really, like, imagine the worst toxic sludge that you can possibly imagine, like, literally glowing. That's the kind of hazard this is. And I thought, oh, well, maybe, you know, maybe this creature has interacted with some of that waste material and, you know, and that caused some kind of mutations. And so I was looking into that, and it turns out, like, there's a biologist out there whose job it is to track radioactive bunny poop, because the bunnies would sit by the barrels that were nuclear reactively hot. They'd get irradiated, and they'd hop around, and they'd have, you know, bunny droppings that were radioactive. And these bunnies are getting eaten by coyotes and cougars and everything else. And, like, maybe that's the connection. And then I stumbled across this article that while they were doing the cleanup in the middle of the desert, they found a railroad boxcar filled with the half charred radioactive carcasses of animals, just packed full of experimental lab animals. And I thought, what the hell is going on with this? Well, it turns out that Hanford from day one had an animal testing laboratory out there. And, it had initiated during World War II at the very beginning of the whole Hanford Manhattan Project program. And the guy that they chose to run this animal testing program was a guy named Lauren Donaldson. And his only academic achievement that I could find before he got this assignment was that he had actually created a super animal. It's called the Donaldson Super Trout, and it is a fish that is 8 times larger and stronger than a normal trout. It reaches sexual maturity in half the time. It can swim in salt water and fresh water, and it's super survival. It's still a viable fish species today. And this is the guy that they have running their animal testing program. And do a little head scratching and do a little research. And at the time, you know, back in the 30s and 40s, they knew that radiation could induce mutations. And we knew that Hitler was incredibly interested in super soldier programs and super animal programs. Yep. In fact, you know, they had trained up 200,000 German shepherds to fight alongside Nazi soldiers during World War II. Russians, the same thing. They were doing human-animal hybrid experiments where they were trying to create humanzees to create super soldiers in yep. Russia. So they were inseminating female chimpanzees with human sperm, and they were trying to inseminate human females with chimpanzee sperm. So like back in that time frame, not only were we worried about the bomb, but like what would happen if the Nazis figured out how to use radiation to induce mutations to create super animals. And so this was a part of the program. Well, you know, we won the war. Interesting side note. So the Hanford nuclear reactor went online in September of 1944. And then in January of 1945, we have reports from the Pasco Air Station, which is just southeast of the Hanford site. It's a Navy fighter plane outfit. And fighter planes are getting scrambled in January of 1945 to intercept glowing orange orbs over the nuclear reactor. The pilots have no idea what's going on at Hanford. They just know that they're chasing this orange glowing orb and they can't keep up with it. And the F-6F Hellcat was like the premier best Navy fighter plane at the time. Operational ceiling of like 37,000 feet. And this thing just completely outpaces them. And then again, in July of 1945, the same month of the Trinity test, a whole squadron of these F-6F Hellcats get deployed to scramble to intercept UFOs over Hanford again. This time, they see a craft that is, quote, as large as 3 aircraft carriers combined. So the history of UFOs in America goes way back to our atomic roots, and it's all right here just upriver from us. Well, we win the war. Hanford becomes a public knowledge, and then the Cold War starts, and secrecy gets clamped down again. And Hanford becomes, like I said, our most important nuclear site. And Donaldson goes to the South Pacific. He's part of the Bikini Atoll test and the disastrous Castle Bravo test and all that crazy stuff that gave rise to the Godzilla mythology. And a new guy comes into the life sciences program in charge of it. His name is Bill Baer. And when they closed Hanford in the 80s, our national park system took it over and they did an oral history project. And so they interviewed a lot of people that worked there. And I've listened to, I think, 3 hours of interviews with this Bill Baer guy. And he talks about all the crazy experiments they're doing with animals and radiation. And then at one point, he talks about how they were irradiating apex predators. And then those predators escaped into the Columbia River and they could not recapture them. And so what they had done was they were irradiating alligators. And in one of the interviews, he holds up a picture of the device they use to irradiate alligators, and it's got an alligator in it. So, like, this is 100% backed up by the historical record. Well, they're doing these experiments. One night, 6 of these experimental apex predators outsmart the scientists, escape their pen, and get into the Columbia River. So it's a total panic at the lab because – they're worried that what if civilians spot these creatures in the water? And so they put out a press release. So we know for a fact, there's no question about it. This is 100% historically verified situation. They wind up hunting these things down and they have this special, you know, Atomic Security Force hunting team that's out there hunting every day for 6 months. They wind up catching 4 of them, but there's 2 that they can't catch. It's January. They decide, well, they'll never survive the winter, and so they call off the hunt. Well, in these same interviews, Bill Baer is saying, yeah, even into the 80s, he was getting calls from Fish and Wildlife guys asking if he knew anything about alligators in the Columbia. And he just says no and hangs up on him. And he laughs about like what a hilarious response that was to these questions. And so you have to ask yourself, what in the hell are they doing irradiating alligators? Like, it makes sense that during the atomic age, they're trying to figure out, like, if a cow eats grass with fallout on it, is its milk safe to drink?
Yeah,
like a really important national security or, you know, kind of question. But why are they irradiating apex predators? Well, to understand that, we have to spend a little bit of time talking about dolphins. So since 1958, the U.S. government has used dolphins to guard some of our most sensitive nuclear sites.
Yep.
And the reason why is that some of our nuclear sites, like the Bangor subbase up here in Washington State, one of the biggest threats is would be like a Soviet scuba diver coming in, maybe even at night, and trying to surveil or sabotage the site. And 1950s sonar technology doesn't have the fidelity to tell the difference between a tuna fish and a sea lion and a Soviet diver. But you can train a dolphin to tell the difference. And so they would attach these apparatus to the dolphin's snout, sort of like this hook grabber claw, and they'd train the dolphin to ram that into the diver, and it would clamp onto the diver, a balloon would inflate and bring the diver to the surface, and the atomic security forces would come pick it up. And this is an extremely effective program. Like, it is a success story for the atomic security forces. Like, we've got a great way to deal with this threat. So if you're in charge of security for Hanford, you've got a gigantic security problem because you've got 45 miles of the Columbia River that flows right through the middle of your super sensitive nuclear site that equals 90 miles of river coastline that you have to guard somehow. And how in the hell are you going to do that? It would be awesome if you could bring those dolphins in because they're already trained up and they know exactly what to do. Problem is that dolphins only operate in salt water. And so you need a creature that can operate in freshwater because, you know, Columbia River is a freshwater river. And so if that was your job, if your job was securing Hanford and you knew that you couldn't use dolphins, but this animal sentry program was super successful, you'd ask yourself a really simple question. What are the world's best riverine hunters? Which animals are the most successful in hunting in that kind of environment? You might try alligators, but you would definitely take a look at jaguars because jaguars are incredibly effective riverine hunters. In fact, yeah, they're the kings of it. I've read reports to say these creatures can hold their breath for 15 minutes. They can swim a kilometer in the open ocean, pound for pound. They're the strongest of the big cats. They have night vision that's six times better than a human being. And as a bonus, they always instinctively drag their prey to shore. And the reason why those dolphins with their apparatus had a balloon that brought the divers up to the surface is because a dead enemy diver at the bottom of the ocean or the bottom of the Columbia River tells you nothing. You want to get that and gather as much information and intelligence as you can from what kind of equipment he had. And so there's no question that if they were considering sentinel animals to guard this river environment, jaguars would have absolutely been at the top of their list. And this is a time in America when the first liger was born. And so, you know, it was the first tiger-lion hybrid. So what we believe happened was that they were trying to create a sentinel creature. They were using the dolphin program as a sort of a template, as a model. Let's see if you can train animals. And let's see if we can maybe modify them genetically to be more suited to the task we're asking them to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we think that just like the alligators, these creatures outsmarted those scientists. They escaped into the wild. And if you look at a map of Washington State where Hanford is, if you go north, east, or south of Hanford, it is just sagebrush desert for days and days and days. If you head west into Klickitat County, there's tons of available habitat and food sources and, you know, cover and all the things that a big cat would need to survive. And so as crazy as it sounds, the most logical, reasonable, rational explanation for why we have over 130 reports of enormous Black Panther creatures prowling around Klickitat County and the Columbia River Gorge area is because they escaped from the animal testing program at the Hanford Nuclear Lab just upriver.
Well, and, you know, granted, there were numerous animals amongst the experimentation, sheep, all kinds of stuff. And there are definite cases, like Chernobyl is a prime example. I just posted an article the other day about a fungus that they've actually found that is unique, that is not just thriving in the area, but actively living on the radioactive material. But it's been in the news for the last many years. The fact that, where'd it go? I just had it up. There it is. Chernobyl has become an unexpected haven for wildlife. While it's still a crazy hot zone for us, wolves have retaken the area. Coyotes have retaken the area. All kinds of wildlife has come back in. So, and never really left, you know. Yeah. There are breeds of dogs, stuff like that, groupings of dogs that have been there the entire time and never left. So the idea of even a wild animal being exposed to all of this and going through some kind of mutation breeding and it continuing the cycle along the way is not necessarily beyond plausibility when it comes to that.
And again, I want to be really clear. Like, we're trying to make sense of the data points.
Oh, absolutely.
And we don't know what this thing is. But it's super exciting. You know, I feel like we have so many – in fact, I've seen video of the creature.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of grainy blob squatch type of stuff. It was posted to a Facebook group in the Western Gorge. A woman was out, you know, watering her plants, and she saw this large, her family saw this very large cat, and she describes it. But of course, it's difficult to make out. It's one of those sort of cell phone shots that's far away. But it's definitely a black cat-like creature, long tail. She describes it as being taller than the tall grass that it's walking through. And so we're not sure what it is. And, you know, we alluded to talking before the show that we're starting to get more serious about our investigations. We've put together a team out here. Myself as a soldier, we have a psychic that has been helping law enforcement find the remains of dead people for since she was 8 years old. And she's got clients on five continents. We've got a former preacher and a former cowboy. And together, we're going to be investigating these things next
year. That's
great. And, you know, getting a little more serious about how we're going to approach this. And because we have so much reticence, I'm going to be offering a pretty significant financial reward for anyone who can bring in the most compelling evidence of anomalous phenomenon here in the Gorge area.
Interesting. Interesting. And is that any phenomenon?
You know, we're going to go and investigate it.
Sure.
You know, we have a couple of different categories. When I first started this program, I thought, oh, for sure, people come in and be pulling our leg or, you know, and I can tell you after 380 reports, maybe less than 10 are obviously people, you know, joking around. It's mostly just ordinary people having some kind of extraordinary experience. Well, I also thought that we'd have people with some mental health issues, and we've seen a handful of those. But I would say between those two categories, you know, jokers and people experiencing some mental health issues, that's like a less than 2% of the people coming in. And so so you've got, you know, jokers, and then you've got people who are enthusiastic but mistaken. So a guy sent me this really compelling trail cam image, and it looked for all the world like a Black Panther leaping. But the trail cam image we had, you know, it was taken 3 seconds apart. The one before it didn't show anything. Then this one is showing it. And then the one the second later doesn't show it. And when I did some image analysis on that, realized, oh, this is actually just a crow flying through the scene in a weird configuration. Like its wings were kind of funny. And so it's important for me to, you know, debunk the things that aren't real, you know, like that are maybe enthusiastic mistakes or misunderstandings. But man, I will tell you, there's like we just had this UFO phenomenon. A woman took three pictures of it. This is on the Oregon side of the river. And it looks like this bright glowing rectangle in the sky. And she observed it for 5 minutes. It never moved. And then, so that's on the Oregon side of the river, the south side of the river. And then that same day, we had reports from the Washington side describing it in the exact same place, unmoving. And those reports were from 3 hours before. Oh, wow. So we had this stable phenomenon of bright glowing light in the sky for at least 3 hours. And then she observed it actually just wink out and disappear, never moved. And so her initial thought was, oh, this is some type of craft, but crafts go places, right?
Yeah.
And so our current theory is that it may have been some type of temporarily stable portal that had stationed itself in this area above the Mosier Plateau. And it was there for 3 or 4 hours and then disappeared. But we have many, many reports of portals. Some of them are like just fantastic science fiction sounding things. One gentleman reported to me that he was driving through the desert and he saw what he thought was like the lights of an Indian casino. And when he got close to it, he realized, no, this is a portal to someplace else. Like the what he could see through the portal was different than the background behind it. And then he claims to have observed a metallic black cube emerge out of this portal and then fly down the gorge at a high rate of speed. You know, and so we've had numerous situations like that. I've had some unusual experiences of time loss and relocation while exploring some of the lava beds in this area. There's a place called Broke Lake Barrows. It's an 8,000-year-old lava bed. It's an area about the size of the island of Manhattan and jumbled jagged rocks. Like I said, I've been professionally land navigating since I was 19 years old. And, you know, in search and rescue, you have to know your stuff or people die. And so I'm very, very competent at land navigating, knowing my way. I don't remember the last time I've been lost. And there's a whole set of things that you do when you're a professional land navigator. You're keeping pace count. You're keeping an eye on the sun. You're tracking landmarks. Like there's a whole set of things you do. And I was in this place, this giant lava bed. It's got these strange micro canyons and it's filled with caves and moss covered rocks and these weird stunted forests, some pools of water that are in these volcanic depressions and cavities. And I was walking, let's just imagine I was in a north-south trench flying my drone. I crashed the drone at the south end of that trench, went down and collected it up, and then walked to the north end of the trench, took a 90-degree turn, and walked another 400 meters deeper into this lava bed. And I found another trench. And so I put up the drone and started flying up and down this trench. And then, like waking up from a dream, I realized that I had been bounced back to the original trench where I had crashed the drone the first time. I have no idea, no recollection of how I got there. The amount of time that had elapsed was not the amount of time I remember walking. And my memory was seamlessly edited. And it was my first experience was like, wow, this is like completely unsettling, flamboozling. Imagine when you see someone's face, even if you don't know their name, if you saw their face again, you'd recognize them, right? And for me, as a, you know, all this time of, you know, tens of thousands of hours in the wilderness, when I'm in a place like a wilderness area, I have that same kind of facial recognition. It's like, I know this place, like it's never a question for me. And, but this is the first time, like since I was 19 years old, where I legitimately have no idea how I got where I was. And the fact that I was in a place that I had already been and studied, like I had flown the drone back and forth up and down this thing.
Sure.
And then I got there and it was the same experience of like waking up from a dream and like realizing, oh my gosh, like I'm in my bed, you know? So very weird. Also kind of exciting. Like hundreds of people have confided in me their stories and I've been hearing about these extraordinary experiences. And that was happening to me in real time. Now, this place, we call it, like I said, Broke Leg Burrows. We've had numerous Sasquatch reports. We've had over a dozen people go missing in this area. Local hunters won't go in there. Compasses don't work. Cell phones don't work. It's a weird spot. But there are no hiking trails in there either because it's super dangerous. And if you wanted to, you could hide like 7 Ewok villages of Sasquatches in there and no one would ever know.
Yeah.
And after I sort of got over my bewilderment that I had been so incredibly turned around in the wilderness, my next thought was, you know, if something had bounced me out, if something had, you know, plucked me up and put me back at start, this was probably the most benevolent way that that could have been done. Mm-hmm. Like no harm was done to me. I was placed close to where I had entered.
So in a familiar place. In
fact, I could see my car, my paranormal investigation rig from where I had been relocated to. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of, you know, nice. Like if they didn't want me to know, or today wasn't the day that I was supposed to be in there, that was probably the kindest, most benevolent way to sort of set that boundary and go any deeper that day.
You know, it loops us back to our beginning of the conversation, which is phenomena, James, and the idea of that, and the idea of being in a place like I'm huge into rocks and minerals, things like that. And the one thing that you get in largely volcanic areas, stuff like that, is magnetite. Magnetite by the boatloads. So it's pretty common for lava fields, things like that, to make compasses go wonky and people get lost and even brain fog, stuff like that, you know, in high magnetic environments.
It's interesting you say that. You know, they've recently discovered that we have magnetite crystals in our brains.
Yep.
They're in structures called magnetosomes. And back in the 80s and 90s, Dr. Michael Persinger up in the Laurentide University in Ontario did studies about what happens if you manipulate magnetic fields around the human brain. He created a helmet that had some solenoids in it. And he was able to reliably replicate paranormal experiences.
Yep.
Things like a sense presence or being able to turn fear on and off like a switch. And because the gorge's electromagnetic environment is so unique, it makes me wonder if when people come here, one of the reasons why this is emerging as one of the most active paranormal hotspots in North America is that these magnetic, electromagnetic properties, these fields, are adjusting our perceptual tuners.
Sure.
And we're perceiving things here that we normally don't perceive. Imagine if your car radio was perpetually stuck on a country music station all your life, country music, and you didn't know that you could change the station. And then one day, that electromagnetic tuner was adjusted slightly, just a little bit. And suddenly, instead of your reality including country music, it included classical music or rock and roll music. Those signals were always present in your environment, but you were not tuned to receive them.
That's right.
And so one of my leading theories about the gorge is that this is a place where your tuner can get adjusted and you may not even know it. And suddenly you're perceiving things that have an independent reality. I mean, we have photographs of the stuff. We have footprints. We have hair samples. You know, we've got co-witnessed events. So I don't think they're personal hallucinations.
Yeah.
I think we're tuning into things that we are normally not tuned to. And that's why so many people are having really astonishing experiences out here.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And that's just it. And it's one of the things that I talk about at conferences. One of the things I talk about at shows regularly, whenever I guest on shows, talking about binaural beat music, things like that. And it is the fact that science is rapidly coming to the world of the paranormal. And with things like specifically quantum entanglement winning the Nobel Peace Prize 2 years ago, the idea of two particles influencing each other despite difference. Let me get that out of my mouth, James. God, man. But that concept,
the tongue twister.
It's the idea that, you know, we are connected in a different way and that we only see 440 nanometers of the electromagnetic spectrum. We only hear 20,000 from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. That's it. There's a whole nother panoply of sounds beyond that. So it's really much more like the fact of, imagine if visiting this place you suddenly receive a few more frequencies on your whole receiver.
Yeah.
Is more what it's like. You know, it's exactly, it's more like you visited there and suddenly you had sideband reception in addition to AM FM, you know, and you could hear ham radios and people talking, you know, stuff like that. Because that's literally what it is there's a whole nother band, a whole nother dimension of things out there that's a bubble of reality that's right up against ours, James.
And I think you're right.
That
I
mean, is quite literally what we're getting into in science now. And it's fascinating and it's incredible. And even whenever you start talking about magnetite fields and heck, just the idea that the Earth's magnetic pole is beyond ready to flip, like literally flip right now.
That thing is cooking.
So it's a crazy world out there and all of these things lead to stuff. And this has been an amazing conversation, James. Thank you so much for your time. I'd love to have you on again and again and again. This has been super great because the idea of having places like this that are anomalous hotspots where more than one thing happens, where you even have geologic hotspots, stuff like that. It's absolutely awesome, James. Let everybody know where they can go to find out more about the Map of the Arcane, where they can go to make their reports in the Columbia Gorge area, all that kind of stuff, or they can come to find your shop.
Sure. So the best place to start is margesoutdoor.com or margesoutdoorstore.com. They both take you to the same place. We're on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram. And honestly, our game could be better in both of those places. But coming up next year, we're going to be really focusing on it. And like I said, I've assembled a really strong team. We're going to be filming a lot of these investigations of the reports that come in. We're going to be offering financial rewards for people who can provide compelling evidence. And so if you just follow those social feeds or, you know, check in on our website regularly, we'll start updating folks with all that because, you know, the things that are happening out here are, first of all, they're astonishing. Second of all, people are gathering physical evidence of them. And what we hope to do with the show when we start, you know, publishing these videos of the investigations is to include the audience in those investigations and have them help us out with some of the background research on some of the areas and things like that. Yeah. So stay tuned. In terms of the maps, right now they're only available in the store. And so if you want to come visit the Gorge, which you absolutely should do, because even if there wasn't a paranormal wonderland, it is an amazing, stunningly beautiful place to visit. You fly into the Portland Airport, Portland, Oregon, and you drive about an hour east of there to Bingen, Washington. And you can find my store out there, and we'd love to see you.
Absolutely awesome, James. Once again, it has been more than a pleasure meeting you tonight, more than a pleasure having you on. Amazing topic, and I'd love to explore this and specifically the geologic area and things like that with you more and the anomalous.
We could spend an
like
hour
that.
Just talking about the geology.
Absolutely.
It is epic. Like, we're talking biblical floods and an apocalypse of fire, and I'm not even exaggerating a little bit. Like, the things that have happened to form this gorge are on a scale that is unimaginable to a human mind. Like, where my store is located right now, 10,000 years ago, there were floods that were 800 feet deep rocketing through the gorge. And so, we talked about magnetism and the moving poles, like, it's all in there. And I'd love to spend more time chatting with you about it, but I think we're out of time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time tonight. I'll be sharing links, all that kind of good stuff by the morning time. So you're more than welcome to come on again. Thank you so much for your time tonight, James. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and I'd love to be back on.
Absolutely. While you are online checking out everything from Margie's Outdoor Store at margiesoutdoor.com, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can stop by, and CuriousRealm.com/videos is where you can find all of the YouTube channels from our guests, everything else embedded. CuriousRealm.com/store is where you can find all of the books and videos by our guests, as well as the official field observation and encounter log from Curious Research. If you are out in the field doing paranormal research, doing cryptid research, doing UFO UAP research, Stop on by and get your copy of the Field Observation Encounter Log. It is your way to be able to gather your data in the field as it happens so it can be ready to shake hands with science come that day. When we come back from this quick commercial break, folks, we will be getting into a 2-hour discussion. The first hour of this discussion was recorded last Wednesday with our good friend Anthony Esemplara from Esemplaya from Epic TV about the New Jersey drones and everything going on. We put together a lot of hypothesis, a lot of information, and even said, like, guaranteed the next thing you're going to see is hearings about money and funding to take care of drones and how we can detect them. And when you find out that they're that, like we did today in the hearing, that amongst the $111 million budget for the FBI every year, or it may have been $11 million, either way, $500,000 of it, a whopping $500,000 goes toward drone mitigation technology. So that's all that goes to it. And it's very revealing stuff. So there was that hearing today. We're going to be talking about everything that came out Wednesday. We recorded the first part this last Wednesday with him, and then so much happened over the week that we were like, we've got to do an updated section of this. We've literally never done this. So there is an update to our pre-recorded guest. There will be a quick turn in there after that second hour, and then you'll hear everything that we recorded this morning that is fresh and crispy and hot off the presses about the hysteria going on in communities, about the videos that have gone crazy all over social media that are absolutely not real. And we'll be getting into that and so much more with Anthony Esemplaya right after this, folks.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the Field Observation and Encounter Log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and thank you for staying tuned during that quick break. And also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially WebWorks Wireless. If you are a live streamer like me, if you have children that game, if you have anything like that, if you are a mobile worker on the go, stop on by and check out WebWorks Wireless. WebWorks Wireless is your source for no throttling, no credit check, mobile internet. They give you your own AT&T wireless router. Pretty much anywhere you have cell phone signal, you have data and enough data to be able to upstream, downstream, everything. We have done 8-hour live streams from our system and never been throttled, never had an issue. Stop on by and check them out. WebWorksWireless.com is your source for that. Our guest in this segment is the amazing Anthony Esemplaya. He is the founder of Epic TV on YouTube. He has been doing all kinds of videos lately, especially the one that you were watching right now out of New Jersey regarding the drones that have been seen all over the place. These things have been literally all over Texas. There have been sightings above DFW. There have been sightings in the UK. And as we've said on social media, it's pretty interesting how all of these sightings start right after we announced the fact that we have a weakness. Like, they didn't necessarily technically announce it, Anthony, but they definitely were like, well, you know, we aren't really talking a lot about the UFO UAP thing because, well, it exposes a weakness over our sensitive areas. And then suddenly we have droves of drones all over, and not just small drones, big drones like this that are 20 feet almost in diameter. This is a huge circular drone, and granted, drone, period, folks. It has FAA lights, all that kind of stuff. So it's not like the aliens came in from intergalactic space and forgot to cut off their headlights. This is something. This is human technology. It's either our technology or technology of an enemy. And, you know, you've been doing this for a long time, Anthony. How did you first come to the world of recording these anomalies, recording these things in the sky?
Back in 1993, I had a sighting out here on Staten Island. And, you know, like anyone else that had an encounter, it leads you down this path where you want to learn more about it and what's going on. So, you know, I picked up my first camera, I'd say 2.5-3 years after that first encounter. And I never stopped looking up after that. It's just been one camera after another in my hand. And now I'm using multiple at one time to try to catch multiple objects in different directions if possible. But this particular object here over New Jersey and in Bridgeton, my colleague, Robert O. White, he has a show, The Order of Light. He's actually holding the camera filming this. And we're talking about an SUV-sized UAV, an unmanned aerial vehicle, just coasting through the sky like nobody's business over residential areas. And what's very disconcerting about that, if this UAV malfunctions or goes haywire and crashes, we're going to have some serious damage. Yeah. And we're not going to know who to pin it on because right now we don't know who it belongs to. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm of the belief that it could be a military or maybe a special access faction within the military, somebody they subcontracted to, probably makes a little more sense. And I think they're just testing it out over civilian areas because sometimes that is a requirement for licensing from even the military. And they do that from time to time if you research it. But the amount of them that are going over homes, you'd think somebody would have made a statement by now like, hey, look, it's us. It's a top secret program. We can't fill you in on why we're doing it, but it is us. You have nothing to be alarmed about. Yeah. Because why would you want the public in an uproar like this? You know, it's crazy.
Well, in the prime example that you're talking about, especially with that testing, if you remember up around 2013, 2014, there was a big thing about a whole bunch of observation balloons. Like big blimp type balloons with observation platforms all over the country. And that was because they were getting ready to be deployed down here on the southern border, all that kind of stuff. But they had to be tested. They had to be tested once again in a public space, in a space where, you know, if it falls, sadly, folks, I'm sorry to say, you're the guinea pig.
Thank you. I'm glad you said it and I didn't.
Well, it's something that we discuss regularly. Unfortunately, there is zero law that protects you from the federal government experimenting on you. There is zero law that protects that.
If it is the government and one of them go down into your roof or your house, something, it's going to be on your own homeowner's insurance. You know, they're going to just cover their own ass, so to speak.
And I guess you could call it act of God. Is the government God?
I think so. Consider them God at this point.
Well, and I mean, another prime example is the fact of how we found out about Area 51 and the disclosure of that, Anthony. It was because of off-burning of chemicals and off-burning of stealth materials that went downwind and gave people cancerous tumors and things like that. Yep. And then they had to be like, well, sorry, you live downwind from an experimental site. And yes, it's called Area 51.
Is what it is.
Here's your lawsuit. And even in the recent hearings, we heard about people who were paid for injuries while in recovery programs, but we can't talk about the recovery program. Bringing it back around once again, hearing there that, well, we have this sensitive area and all these sensitive areas that apparently have a huge weakness in them. And suddenly, once again, we start seeing drones directly over these areas. Like right here where this drone is, right down the road is the New Jersey Naval Station, all that kind of stuff. You know, whenever you're looking at DFW and all that, where the big drones were sighted here, all that kind of stuff. And where the recent flap happened in DFW, you have the Lockheed Martin facility. right there in DFW, right down the road at the Air Force Base. So
not too far from Dover Air Force Base either, right there in Bridgeton, down by Vineland, either. Very close.
Yeah.
And I think it's multiple bases doing testing nationwide, even worldwide, because we're seeing drone reports come in from London now. So we have military bases overseas. We could just be testing them all out in one big rollout. That's probably what this program is, a big rollout for these massive drone programs.
Yeah, precisely. And even the fact that, you know, this is something that not a lot, I know, and like we said pre-interview, this is something that people like MUFON do. This is why people like MUFON and Norfolk and stuff like that say, like, please, please share with us as much detail as possible, because and any sighting. Any sighting, even if it proves to be fully explainable, because when you see something and say something, somebody else may see something and say something. And I'm showing right now a picture that the two of you took the same night of the same thing that you have triangulated to the point that you now know that y'all were looking at the same object.
Correct. My partner, Robert, and I, Robert Earl White, we are triangulating UFOs from Staten Island to New Jersey right now. So when a craft comes over my area in Staten Island, I contact Robert. I give him latitude, longitude, course settings, and we try to pick up the same craft. And we've had some success with that. As you see, this is just a photo, but we have video as well. The same exact red, gigantic red orb. That flew over my location, flew over his location. We were able to get it, triangulate it, and both get it on film, video, the whole nine yards, and we were able to observe the same object, which is rare, very rare.
Yeah, yeah, precisely, and especially the fact that you're able to triangulate that. Once again, that is why sighting reports are hugely important. That's why letting other people know, because as we say as Curious Research whenever we're on shows, like, research doesn't happen in a vacuum. If you don't, like, you can be out in your backyard all night, but if you don't have somebody that you trust that you can bounce it off of, that you can trust with anything that you send them. Now, granted, as we talked about a couple weeks ago with the recent Lou Elizondo kerfuffle, about the mothership picture in his presentation. Yeah, yeah, well. You know,
unfortunately, that was
and it's one of those. Yes, as somebody in the world of intelligentsia, you would hope the fact that he doesn't get to the point that he just puts things out unvetted. But the thing is, when something comes in from a vetted source, Anthony,
this is what frightens me about these UAP hearings. And having the same people come up and speak all the time, because the same way Lou Elizondo, he had a little mishap with that mothership, but he spoke about it to the masses as if it was an actual mothership. Yeah. Now, what if he told Congress that in a skiff that I'm telling you this is a mothership, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
And it's a lens flare of a light fixture reflecting in a mirror behind you, projecting itself onto another image. I mean, how did you not know that? Being in the intelligence field, that's so easy to,
Well, how did you not
just figure that out?
How did you not just throw it into John Greenwald from the Black Vault, figured it out within 5 minutes with the reverse image search on Google?
Right. Or even Mick West would have figured that out in seconds.
Yeah. So, the question does come to bear. And, you know, that is one of those things of like, that's why you have somebody that you work with, but also why you double check your buddy's stuff and why you're okay with your buddy saying like, this isn't what you think it is.
And even when you release it to the masses, I always tell the general public, let us know your thoughts down below, or if you ever seen anything like this and tracked something like this. We want to hear from everybody. Now, this was an exceptional piece over the ocean here on Staten Island.
Yeah.
This particular object, this is about 100, maybe 150 feet wide, just sailing over the ocean, and it just gets to a point where it completely dematerializes out of sight. And, you know, people ask all the time, well, how do I know it's not the International Space Station or a satellite?
That's not the space station.
No, the space station actually makes a double diamond projection in the camera lens. But these particular objects, we track everything in space, from satellites to non-manned aerial vehicles to planes. We have a flight tracker up, heavens above, all these different apps and we're reading everything that's coming in. And this is none of the above. Now, I'm not saying that this can't be a top secret satellite that we don't know about. But when we saw this object and what it did and how it dematerialized into nothing really, really was shocking.
More than that, and there's some camera shake and things like that and what's going on. But also, if you look at the, it's way too slow to be a satellite. Number one.
Right. Satellites travel at the same speeds, like 17,000 miles per hour. They're on a straight path.
Yeah. It looks like a shooting star almost.
That was my fault for pulling it off the tripod, but I'm trying to follow it because it's actually turning
past the angle of your tripod.
Right. But that particular craft is coming down and moving to the left and swinging back to the right.
Yeah.
And it's on this weird pattern. And we catch these transmedium objects every now and again, and they're over the ocean. And right before they touch the water, they dematerialize. Which is another shock to see.
Fascinating. And that, you know, once again, the video that we were just showing, here's a much better right here at the beginning. And the speed at which it's moving, the speed at which it's moving from that star down, like that's nowhere near the speed of a typical satellite in the air.
No, absolutely not.
And it also would not be as bright.
Correct.
As the background stars. It wouldn't be brighter than the background stars.
Absolutely not. Satellites are very dim, faint white.
Yeah.
Now sometimes people do confuse satellites for UFOs.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
it's signaling me and they'll see a flash.
Yep.
9 times out of 10, that's just a satellite's array system, solar array system, glinting either in the moonlight or the sunlight up in space, and you get that reflection. It gets very bright, and then it dims back out. That does happen from time to time, and you know it's a satellite when that happens. But these objects, they're illuminated from the inside, extremely bright to the eye. You don't even need night vision or a camera to see it. You just see the thing floating through the sky. It's massive. You can't miss it. My favorite ones are the ones you can't see with the naked eye, that only the night vision and FLIR can pick up. Those are really ones that make your hair stand up on the back of your neck.
Well, and you sent us this one as well, which is fascinating.
So this one really threw me for a loop for many years, still to this day. That's right over Fort Earl Naval Weapons Station in New Jersey. Over the ocean. And the kicker to this is I'm using a Psionics color night vision camera, and it's only visible in the night vision spectrum. Now, 2.5 hours prior to this sighting, there was a SpaceX launch in Florida, which would not be visible to me here in Staten Island, New York. But what's a little hard to see in this dubbed video, out of that cone of light, there's actually little orbs of light that are being released from this thing. They're very tiny. You really have to pay attention. Maybe as the video goes further out, you'll get a little more better see it. I think this was a TikTok copy I made it from. But there's these little orbs of light twinkling, releasing over the ocean. Still to this day, have no idea what it is. Called everybody. Called SpaceX. Called the military base more than 7 times. Sent correspondence there, letters, emails. And I just keep getting the runaround. You have to speak to this person or this person or that person. And I never get any answers, but I have no idea what that object was. Just amazing to see, though.
Yeah, yeah. And once again, the definition of it is pretty fascinating. And again, the size of it, is
massive.
Massively huge. And the fact that it's only visible within the infrared spectrum. It's only visible in the night vision, not whenever you just turn the camera on its own. And your psionic stuff is great.
Best camera.
Let's get in for a second. Let's get into some of the techniques that you're using and some of the equipment that you are using, Anthony.
Certainly. To capture this stuff. I use 2 psionics cameras. I have a Psionics Aurora Pro and I have a Psionics Aurora Black, which are both 780p quality. However, the Pro version is just a little clearer than the Black version. And I set them up side by side in different, directions in space. And I just let them film 9 times out of 10. I'll let them go for, 15, 20 minute intervals.
Yeah.
And then I'll take a peek, see if I see anything in there. If I do, maybe I'll hit it with the IR laser beam or not, depending on what the object is.
Mm-hmm.
And in between them, I set up a FLIR camera. because I want to see if I can catch anything coming off the water in that spectrum of light and going up into the sky. And the FLIR and the night vision are just dynamite
for
that.
Well, and you would also at that point, especially with the FLIR, not so much the night vision, but with the FLIR specifically, you would get any kind of exhaust. Even if it was the fact if it was a diminished exhaust, you would see a heat difference between the object and where the thrust is coming from.
Now, the only problem, and I recently learned this thanks to one of our congressional hearings with the FLIR cameras, if you have an object that's there, it could be reflection of a heat plume from another object miles away, reflecting off clouds and things of that nature. Yep. So now I added that to my toolkit and I really make myself aware. And I only take that thing out now when it's crystal clear, no clouds in the sky at night. I use that FLIR camera now because if there's clouds, I really don't want to take the chance that something's reflecting from somewhere else.
Yeah. FLIR camera. And that's just it. People really, it's no fault of their own. Anthony, you know, whenever I say like people don't understand because it's not their job to understand. It's not their job to understand like it is for me whenever I answer to a client what that glare is in the video that they have. Right. You know, I have to be able to explain how a light from the side wash of stage might hit the lens and create a glare inside of the lens. You know, how that is an absolute possibility to happen. All that kind of stuff. You know,
but, you know, filming all these, you know, I've been very fortunate and blessed. Thank God. You know, I work with Darcy Weir. He's a UFO film director. And a lot of the footage we're seeing tonight has been in a couple of his recent documentaries. And, you know, you got to be blessed to know people like that. Look at this. Now, at first, I'm saying to myself, I got a TR-3B. I got one of these Aurora craft. This thing made absolutely no noise. And then you can actually see it lift. Now, excuse me for the fuzz that's on there because I'm so far zoomed in. Yeah. It's so deep in space. But when you play it from the beginning, you actually watch it coming down and then you'll watch the nose light dip up and it kind of levels off, which is amazing. It's under intelligent control.
See that, you see that left rear light kind of pull down. Like it's correcting
itself. It's one object, whatever it is. It's one object.
Oh, absolutely. Now, absolutely.
If it was a plane or military, it would have to have that FAA light on it. And we just don't see that.
And you know, that is something that you might be able to miss it at an oblique angle because of a brighter light. The brighter side wing light that might be, you know, drowning it out, something like that. But you won't miss it.
On a down trajectory.
Well, and you also won't miss it in night vision.
No way.
Because that pulse will get past the glare. It's distinctive. So to see this, to see the fact that there is none of that. And once again, to see that first light and the trailing light on the back end both move at the same time shows you that they're both moving on same plane.
And to be silent.
Yeah.
Completely silent.
Yeah.
It really makes all your hair stand up when you're alone and you're out on the beach and nobody's out there with you and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and something like that flies over. I mean, it's really, really make your hair stand up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really get you thinking.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, there is so much out there. There's so much out there, Anthony. And the great thing is that things like the psionics system, I mean, you don't even have to go psionics to get something like this. Like you could go out and buy like a $150 night vision monocular.
Absolutely.
And even those things record to SD card and stuff like that nowadays.
Absolutely. You know? Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3, night vision, whatever you could afford that could pick up that spectrum of light, it'll work. It really will.
And even now, the FLIR cameras for phones and stuff like that, like I think I picked mine up for like $125 or something like that on an Amazon flash deal, you know?
Great, great little attachment. I have it and I utilize it. It's great.
I will say it annoys me that no matter what you do, it says FLIR in the corner.
But it does. Can't get rid of that. Even on the more expensive.
Shameless self-promoters. But it's amazing to see where the technology has come. And even now, I don't know if you have a MADAR system. I have a MADAR system here at home. It's pretty incredible. I'm getting ready to reach out to them to have them on the show. It's I want to say I got it from Kevin Day. he was tied with those guys as they were developing it. It's a really cool Raspberry Pi based system that has specifically a reader for the magnetosphere in it.
Oh.
So it basically picks up magnetospheric anomalies in your location. And it sets up a huge node. So basically your system is a node within a larger system. So I know like there are now within the last year that I've gotten it, there's another person in Austin that has one and one right up the road. So here locally, there's three of us. Yeah. Madar, MADAR. And it is absolutely cool. It's a few $100. I think it was like $250 or something like that. But it's cool. You can go in on the Madar map and you can see if there are hits that happen in your area, when the last magnetospheric hit was that was an anomaly, you know, stuff like that. So they can literally, if there are enough of these, they can track if that magnetospheric anomaly moves across Texas.
Wow.
You know, if it's just a blip that pops up, maybe it's just something that, you know, a meteorite that came through the atmosphere, you know, so you can compare that to other meteorological data and everything else and find out if that disturbance in the magnetosphere was a sprite, you know, from a storm or something like that.
The technology is getting mind-boggling today with what the regular consumer can have, huh?
Well, and
it's amazing.
And it's also the fact of, much like the former NASA scientist said in the last panel, he was like, right now we're using consumer grade technology. We're using things that are not made to detect these things, We just happen to be seeing them with what's there.
Funny you mentioned that. A couple nights ago, I took a REM pod that's for spirits and stuff like that. It's, you know, spirit activity. Yep. And I got this thing set up in the backyard, and I just have two cameras going on tripods. All of a sudden, this red object flies over, and the REM pod goes off. Not 2 seconds later, the tri-field meter starts going off. So whatever came over interacted with the signals on these two, you know, devices that had simultaneously.
That's right.
And they were like 10 feet away from each other. It was really, and I got that all on film, which was really wild because that never happens.
Yeah.
Never happens.
Yeah. Especially two of them going off simultaneously.
Simultaneously.
And once again, when we're looking at the fact that, and they even said that in the NASA panel, the fact of like, no, we need to team up with NOAA. You know, and we need to start getting data from your satellites. And if there are sensor platforms, if you're out there with NOAA or things like that, and there are sensor platforms that can detect things near this range, let us know. We'll help you build instrumentation to increase that.
Right.
But that's exactly what the former NASA scientist said, was like, we know all this stuff about deep space quasars and black holes and everything else because we build equipment to find it.
Correct.
We don't have that for this, you know.
But here's where I just can't wrap my mind around. They're in space, okay? You can't tell me that if I'm watching this from the ground, they've never seen anything like this from the International Space Station.
Sure.
They have to have seen it.
Yeah.
They have to have it documented. It has to be cataloged. Somebody's seeing the information. Somebody's documenting. Somebody's reading it. But who? And why isn't it trickling down to the Arrow offices and offices that should have it?
Well, never forget, this is something that we talk about on my show regularly. The great majority of STS missions were classified. You do not know anything about them. They were not a civilian mission. They didn't even have their directives until it was after launch. Because they were going up to maintain an NSA satellite or a CIA satellite, things like
very
that,
true.
You know, or even launch said satellites into orbit. So most of the STS missions were not civilian missions. That's why they don't have civilian pilots. It's why every pilot comes from the military, because they have to have some kind of DOD clearance in order to handle these things, you know.
Right. STS-75, not to cut you off, March 1996, STS-75, when they were releasing that cable out to space, that ended up a little tether, the tether incident.
Yeah.
And look at all those objects that that caught. And they tried to say that it was where the camera was shaped, that you were seeing these big disc-shaped crafts and yada, yada, yada. I don't care what they say. It looked like UFOs.
It was a fascinating one. It was a fascinating one. It is one that kind of tests the anomaly of lens, you know, because
from 96, they should have been creating stuff that can detect these things from then. They should have started.
That's just it. You know, literally from, I would think from 53, when we first put forth the first paper on this kind of stuff, you know, from the Brookings Institute, where it was like, with satellites and launching into space, might we come across another life form? And they're like, if we do, don't tell them. Don't tell anybody. It'll panic humanity. So from that point, We should have been building a sensor platform.
We'd have been so far advanced right now if they would have did it from then on.
Even the rife foolishness of let's throw our DNA code and our directions onto the side of a satellite.
Yeah. Just send it out there for anybody to find.
Totally. I'm just going to throw my 23andMe info on the side of this and throw it in the mail.
Welcome that into space.
Yeah, just send my genetic info to a stranger. Here you go. Or were they strangers? That's the other question.
A lot of people seem to think we were a genetic experiment by extraterrestrials, you know?
A lot of people believe it. Could be. Even when you're talking about this technology, could it be that the technology for stuff like TR-3Bs is reverse engineered technology? Or are there people like, you know, the good Mr. Pice that are just really good at physics?
I'm of the belief that we have reverse engineered these craft.
Same.
We've downed them. We reverse engineered them. And I would go so far as to say we use them on a daily basis now.
Yeah.
What we're using them for, I don't know. I don't think we have secret space programs and things of that nature. But I do think we have technology that will blow your mind, because everything you see now that's in use, they're 30 years advanced.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
We use it now. And my good friend Jim Goodall tells me all the time, you wouldn't believe the things that they have there right now.
Yeah.
It would melt your brain.
The head of Skunk Works said years ago that they had the technology to take E.T. home.
That's right. And that was actually said to Mr. Jim Goodall.
Yeah.
That was told to him at a conference. So just imagine. Just imagine.
And that's just it. You know, when you start looking at these things, the idea that not just that we've reversed engineered things, but the fact that we as the public are woefully behind the chips that you have in your computer that are coming out for Christmas, you know, the release of the new systems and everything else, they are woefully behind what the military has. A military grade machinery, things like that. Yeah. And we find out very little about special access programs, unless it's the fact of that technology is viable in the public market. If that technology is viable in the public market, then let's patent it and make some money on it. You know? I keep saying even with the ongoing hearings, Anthony, it's the idea that, are we going to see an alien body rolled out in a tube in a Harry Houdini aha moment?
They tried it in Mexico.
Yeah, okay, they did. How'd that work out? How'd that one work out? And I still wonder how they even. I still wonder how the Antiquities Department of Peru didn't just hop into that meeting and go, "Yeah, we'd like our stolen artifacts back." You just went in front of the Mexican Congress and showed them these pilfered artifacts.
You gotta love Jaime Lussan though for trying, but he's been trying to show those puppets for years. People knew exactly what was when that conference was going on. I think I had like 12,000 people in my live chat for that.
Wow.
It was something crazy. We did like, you know, a 500,000 views in 2 hours. It was something astronomical like that.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And before they brought him out, I said to everybody, I guarantee you Jaime Lussan rolls out those alien puppets.
Oh, yeah.
And not 5 minutes later, here they came. And I couldn't believe he did it again. He brought them out. Like, the whole world knew what they were 10 years prior.
Yeah.
That they were fake.
Yeah. Oh, these are new ones. These are new ones.
Yeah, these
are new ones. It's like, great. Awesome.
These ones are made out of plaster Paris. Yeah, the other ones were made out of sourdough. Yeah. You know, it's crazy.
and that's just it, though. You know, the sensationalism. And you do have to kind of wonder. And you do have to kind of wonder, even to bring it back to Lou Elizondo. Because, yes, let's just admit it. There are secret space programs. Are there 20 and back programs? I don't personally think so.
We don't have the Emory Smith Corey Good programs. No. We don't have those. However, yeah, secret space, yes.
Yeah. Cheyenne Mountain was our space program before we officially said that, hey, we have a space force. However, you want to know about the secret space program, feel free to look up the X-37B. That thing was flying over our head for 2 years, and when we heard about it, it was, here's the first unmanned space vehicle coming back from its successful two-year mission.
Yep.
Like, what was it doing for 2 years? That
and thought it was a UFO, right?
Yeah.
How many people probably filmed that and thought it was a UFO?
Yeah.
And that brings me back to my point. You can track satellites and you can track objects in space that are trackable.
Yes.
But something like the X-37B would not be on any of those apps or software for you to track. No. So
that's just it. You may see a C-17 or a C-37 Hercules, something like that, you know, on a C-5 Galaxy on Flight Radar 27. You're not going to see an F-16.
No. No,
you're not going to see a military combat craft or anything like that. You're not going to see a military drone.
They're on their own system.
Yeah, they're on their own responder system.
Right. So, absolutely.
And that's just it. You know, you're not going to see a military satellite. You're not going to see an Alphabet Agency satellite.
Correct.
You do see tons of Russian and Chinese satellites, though.
Absolutely. Look, there's only so much we can do with tracking them. Mm-hmm. But whatever we can track, whatever's trackable to us, we do track.
Oh, absolutely. And
it's important. It's very important to track these craft.
It's massively important, and it's massively important to know what's in the skies over your head. You know, even tools like Stellarium is one of my favorites, because not only is it showing you the stars and planets over your head, but it'll show you Starlink coming in.
Absolutely.
It'll identify the satellite as it comes over you.
Absolutely.
Yep. So, and especially, you know, whenever you're looking at footage like this one right here, which this was taken with your psionics.
Watch this. It'll dematerialize right before it hits the water.
Oh my God.
I cut off there.
It's okay.
This actually dematerializes before it touches the water.
That's just crazy.
I think the screen cuts it off. But.
It might. But it's pretty incredible to see it.
Right before it gets to the bottom of that tree line, it just fizzles out. It's gone. And the water's not 5 feet underneath it.
Yeah. That is that's crazy.
There you go.
It's crazy. And once again, as somebody who's out in the backyard all the time with my telescope, my cameras, things like that, to see things like this moving, to see things like that on something like a thermal imaging camera on a night vision camera of this quality, not just of this quality, but seeing it, without any flashing lights, seeing it with none of that, because if it was there, it would show up on that.
100%. You would see it clear as day. In 90% of my videos, I show airplanes. I'll show satellites.
Yeah.
I'll even show birds. Just to show everybody what it looks like to me. And you can have a plane that's well over 30,000 feet up, and it'll be the tiniest little grain of ice, but you will 100% see that FAA light.
Yeah.
This one right here, this massive Tic Tac one, if you want, there it goes right there as soon as you hover on it. This big purple, that's a shooting star, but this big purple Tic Tac thing flew right into frame, and again was I can only see it through this night vision spectrum. Now that's a shooting star you see right there, but I think the next one that comes in was this big giant purple Tic Tac shaped object, and it was massive, whatever this thing was. And it was pitch black outside. There was no lights on. Again, a red object just coming through. I think this is the one where the REM pod ended up going off, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just crazy. And it looks tiny from the camera's perspective, but it's really not. You know, when you see it, it kind of looks tiny to you, but when I'm looking at it through the, it's massive. It's massive.
There
it goes. It goes that, and it'll slow down right now so you can get a really good look at it. Look at that thing.
Yeah, that is large. That's large.
You can see the atmosphere change behind it, whatever it was. Crazy. Pretty crazy.
And you know, once again, seeing shooting stars, stuff like that, because you posted a great video the other day just of shooting stars going crazy because of the Geminid meteor shower.
Right.
And that's just it. They're pretty distinctive shooting stars. You will see them come in, start, they glow brighter, and then they go away.
Oh, yeah.
You know, things like that. So
I like to do that. I like to put those videos up so people can observe and see what it looks like from my camera's perspective. So they know when I'm showing them something that's not that, they can compare it between the two.
Well, that's just it. You've got to be able to compare and contrast things. And you've got to be willing to compare and contrast things, Anthony. That's one of the things that I talk about regularly is the idea that, I want more red circles. A lot of people in not only this side of the para research, but paranormal research, cryptid research, they're like, oh, enough with the red circles. I'm like, please, more red circles.
You need more, yeah.
Because unfortunately, what we need is the attitude of people accepting the explanation of what's inside the red circle.
Correct.
Because, more red circles means more data, which means we're going to have a larger data field of known quantitative, which only narrows down the unknown.
Yeah.
You know, so more of them, please, you know, but we do have to get rid of that, not just the want of confirmation, but the confirmation bias.
Right.
Once something's been shown to, oh, no, that's a shooting star, you know, or no, that's an airplane on an oblique angle.
If you're an investigator, you know, just coming into this, and even if you're just filming and you capture something and you really don't know what you captured, before you put it up and show it to the masses and tell them this is a bona fide off-world, vehicle, it's definitely contact somebody else in the field. Contact me. Even reach out to, you know, Cheryl Costa, Mark D'Antonio, yourself, Joe, Chris. Try to get anybody and try to, you know, compare notes with them, because I'm sure after you show it to four or five seasoned people, you'll get an answer of some kind.
Well,
and it might not be the answer you want, but at least you get a better head on what it is.
Well, you know, I showed you this video before we started, and my audience is very familiar with it. This is the example that I normally give whenever I'm on shows. This is something I shot in my backyard. And if I just went online and just posted this with nothing more than I shot this in my backyard,
they would have thought it was alien spacecraft half the world, believe it or not.
Yeah, you know, and when you're given the data of, and what you're looking at, folks, for the listening audience, is a large black dot surrounded by a circle of multicolored light that is undulating and changing colors, things like that. Now, given no data, sure, that's an alien. I see those things all the time. You know, is what you'd get.
Yeah.
Now, if I gave the data of I shot this in my backyard in April, in Cedar Park, Texas, facing southeast, this time of day, on this day, and at this angle from the ground, you know, this ascension from the ground, you would find out pretty quick that is the dog star Sirius in the night sky, unfocused from my telescope. Because it's the first star I'm focusing my telescope on to dial it in for triangulation. So I haven't focused it yet. And the only reason that it's actively moving at all is because, the Earth rotates. And it's moving at that speed because, that's the speed of the Earth's rotation. You just can't see it. It's exaggerated because of my 8-inch telescope.
And the telescope isn't locked.
Yeah, my telescope isn't locked, so it's picking up the drift of the actual star as it moves in the sky.
Yeah.
It's just exaggerated because of the size of the telescope.
Right.
You know?
Great cat, by the way.
And it's one of those, like, when it happened in front of me, I hit record because I was like, this is a big learning moment. Like, I put it into my PowerPoints, all kinds of things, because it's a prime example of how easy it is to deceive somebody.
Correct.
And how easy it is to get very excited about something if you don't know what it is.
Right. Right.
You know, and you're right to be excited about it. You're right to be excited about the catch.
Exciting. It's exciting just what it is, being you film serious and being able to see that. Yeah. But what's even cooler, so many more people are going to get to see that now, and they'll never mistake an object in the sky for a UFO when it looks like that. They'll say, that's a planet. I've seen that before. Well, I know what that looks like now.
And it also just honestly really, really goes to show, even as far as still photography goes, Anthony, that idea of, look at what a very bright object unfocused looks like. That black that black circle in the middle is the actual reflection of the mirror in the front of the telescope.
Right, right, right.
That's the secondary mirror in the front, is why you see that black dot, you know? Yeah. And whenever you start seeing digital photography where it's got the diamond pattern, that is literally a reflection of the sensor.
That's right.
In the back of the lens, right. You know, like that's what the sensor looks like.
The bokeh effect. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and if you aren't a photographer, if you don't spend your life behind a lens, like I have professionally shot and edited video for the last 25 years of my life. Yeah. I'm 50 this year, you know,
God bless.
same thing with audio work, stuff like that. You know, forensic audio work, forensic photography recovery, all kinds of stuff. So it's like I have lived my life swimming in this realm. And if you haven't, anomalies from lenses, anomalies from digital cameras, things like that can be very deceiving. A lot of people don't. A lot of people especially don't realize that there is AI in your camera. Feel free to check out the AI pictures of the moon from Samsung Pictures, where it's automatically fixing the picture of the moon for you. Your camera sensor will find little artifacts and try to make it into something because, according to the algorithm of the camera, that should be something there.
Correct.
So it'll make it into something.
I must get 30, 40 lens flare photos sent to me a week.
Yeah.
And people just don't know what it is. They think it's an actual artifact that was there, and it's not.
Yeah. Or the fact of, you know, I didn't see this when I was taking the picture.
But the camera picked it up.
The camera picked it up, and the camera not only picked up the tiny pixel that was out, but it also accentuated it, trying to make it make sense to what's in the background.
Right.
You know? And it's pretty interesting to see how that is kind of getting in the way of some things. And that's one reason why, you know, MUFON is very, very particular about the digital photos that they take in and the metadata attached to them and stuff like that. You know?
Yeah.
They won't accept a digital picture without all the metadata attached to it for that reason.
And that's the metadata that goes with it's very important because that lets you know that it hasn't been manipulated in any way.
That's right.
Also gives you the exact date, time, you know, everything that the camera documented about that image. But to another point, a very good friend told me a long time ago, you shouldn't just be using one camera. Try to document it on as many cameras as you can, because if you get it on more than one, there's no denying what it could be.
That's right.
If you got it on more than one camera, then it really happened.
Well, and that goes to speak a lot to your rig. The fact that you're using the mobile camera with the thermal in the middle and two different psionics cameras.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just it. You know, it could be the fact that your camera has a pixel out. Your camera has a problem.
Even a camcorder, an IR camcorder I got going as well. I set them all up on a tri-bar and I just got them all aimed up in different directions, you know. And sometimes I keep them all focused in the same direction. Because, like I said, if I could capture that same object on more than one camera, you know, more power to it. Then I could show you in night vision, in FLIR, and regular camera all the same object, which is really interesting to see.
Well, and with the same timestamp on it.
Correct.
At that point. Correct. You know, that's another big one, folks, is keep that timestamp on. If you're out recording with video, if you're out with the still camera, stuff like that, make sure to have your time, especially if it has the GPS option. If it has option to have location on there.
Yeah. And funny you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that, because on the psionics, the only camera that has that availability is the high-end one, the Aurora Pro, the more expensive one. The lower-grade ones do not have that.
Yeah.
So that one right there in the middle that has the compass on it, you could set it up to where you have your timestamp and everything like that. But the other cameras, they do not have it set up for that feature. It doesn't come with it. But this one does right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too cool, man. And, you know, we've got you for about another 15 minutes here, Anthony.
Sure.
What advice do you give to people as far as finding somebody? Because, you know, you've got Robert that you work with up there. How do you go about finding somebody that you can work with, finding somebody that you can more than work with, but that you can research with, you know, because research gets thick, it gets passionate, it's very personal.
You have to find somebody that immerses themselves in the subject just as much as you do, because you can have, you know, a partner that you're working with, but they might not just be as interested as you. Me, I'm the kind of guy that, you know, if I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I make a cup of coffee, I'll go set the cameras up, you know, in the backyard.
Yeah.
If there's stars in the sky, I have cameras set up. The minute I open my eyes, it's my passion. And Robert, he's the same way. And I think we work great together. And by the way, for those that know, I'm talking about Robert Earl White. His show's The Order of Light on YouTube. Great guy, very, very talented guy. And he's out there night and day just like I am. And we compare notes. We're on the phone with each other constantly. And we're constantly comparing notes about what I filmed here is, what I filmed on Staten Island, what he filmed in New Jersey. And he went through, his family went through a very well-documented encounter back in 91, where this triangular craft had blew up by a nuclear facility. And the police, there's police department reports on this, and EMS and fire department and military, it's very well documented. But I had a triangular sighting in 93 and his family's in 91. That's what made us connect and start talking to each other a few years ago, and then just start working out in the field, and we clicked. I mean, I've worked with so many people. I've worked with so many famous people in the field of ufology as well. But you don't have to be famous to click with somebody and work well. And Robert's more like a brother than a work colleague. And that's how I look at him. He's just a dynamite guy. Go check him out.
Yeah. And, you know, that is hugely important, vastly important, even in the world of podcasting, you know, because it as a musician, I learned that years ago. Bands are great. Bands are awesome. They are not always the easiest way to get a whole bunch of music written rapidly.
Correct.
Because, you're talking about a lot of egos. You're talking about a lot of personal investment in the music.
Heads. Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about a lot of differing and different opinions when you're talking a 4 or 5 man band, stuff like that. You know, unanimous goes out the door real quick, and it goes 3 out of 5, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry, song starts in G. you know, like, that's just how it works. But finding somebody, finding that pair, finding that person that you can work with a shorthand that you can work with, where they're almost on the same step with you without even getting there. You know,
and you got to find somebody that's able to take constructive criticisms too. Mm. When they think it's an unidentified flying object and you don't, and then you can compare notes and you can come to terms with it being or not being, that's hard to find today as well. You know what I mean? Because there's so many channels out there that just film any light in the sky and tell you it's a UFO, or they manipulate it and tell you it's a UFO. And that's a problem. That's a big problem.
It's a huge problem. You know?
We have to stay away from those kind of people. And you have to go, like you said, data is what's important. Fact-based channels.
Well,
that's important.
Well, and people who consider their data, Anthony.
Correct.
That is probably my biggest point with curious research, is that the word evidence gets thrown around way too flagrantly, in my opinion.
UFO experts gets thrown around. None of us are experts. Let's get that out there right now. You know, we're all novice because none of us have a UFO chained up in our backyard that we can go out and study.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a hobby is what it is. It's a passion and a hobby.
Yes.
But none of us really have the answers to it.
Well, it's like we say regularly on the show, you may find an expert in Sasquatch folklore.
Correct.
You may find an expert in you know, Loch Ness Monster folklore. Will you find a Loch Ness Monster expert? Not yet, because we ain't found a Loch Ness Monster.
Right.
You know? Right. So we may have numerous experts on, much like people like Michael Schrat. Amazing, amazing. I love brilliant. Michael Schrat. Brilliant, brilliant researcher, and one of the people who is an absolute expert when it comes to UFO history.
He's a UFO historian.
And when it comes to, you know, aviation history, things like that. Those are experts, you know, and that is expert data that you can take. The everything else is datum in a data pool. You know, and everything that you're submitting, just because, once again, that we've proven what's in the red circle doesn't invalidate the fact that it's data and part of a data set.
Correct.
You know, and that's important to feed the data set. We've got to feed the data set. So more of them is what we need. Yeah. We need more Magellans. We need more people like you who are not afraid to stay up all night with three cameras on the night sky. You know,
you do. I appreciate that. You know, I was just going to say Avi Loeb, the Harvard professor, he's doing some big things with the Galileo project, and he's actually out on the ocean trying to pick up samples from the bottom of the ocean of what he believes those little sphere balls could be.
Yeah, the spheroids.
We need more people out there like that collecting data and tangible evidence that we could put our hands on and really study in a lab, too.
Well, that's honestly
a lot of credit. That's real work.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly. That is real and proper field work. And you know, that's honestly one of the reasons why I am a proponent of the change to UAP. And that is because it brings science into it. Phenomena and phenomenology is directly the backyard of science, like exactly the backyard of science. And I'll take 1 second to pull this off my shelf.
Sure.
To elucidate that. This is an actual desk reference from a scientific lab that made back in the 60s. I want to say it was, I have to take my glasses off to read, folks. 1974 was the last printing of this. Strange Phenomena. Note the title of this actual lab manual. And inside, all kinds of documentation of ball lightning, things like that, aerial phenomenon, lightning appearing in the sky near earthquake sites, ball lightning near that,
you know, interesting.
All kinds of stuff. So the actual phenomenology, actual phenomena, so that whenever you're doing an experiment, well, we can discount this. Because we know it's this happened. This was documented in an article in 18. Things in here go back to 1873, man.
We have the data 1700s. Behind it. Absolutely.
It's wild.
You know what? Funny you bring that up. Give me 1 second. I want to show you.
Go ahead. It's the fact of, you know, that's what science is. The day it stops, it becomes doctrine. It's no longer science. We're supposed to keep looking into it. And phenomena is one of the important parts.
As an investigator, when you're investigating cases, you know, these are just some cases that I went through this year.
Oh, my God. My God, and, you know, Anthony.
I document, you know, every case that I go on. I print everything up and what I see. And I put it right here and I, you know, got it all cataloged. You know, what time it flew over, where I was, who was witness to it, if I called MUFON, piece of information is in there in black and white. And it's important to document and category all of that, you know, for future investigations. It really is.
Yeah.
You have to have that all down on paper, too.
It is absolutely essential. I mean, to the fact that is quite literally why I penned the field observation and encounter log. For people like you that are out in the field, it's quite literally a field guide that fits in your back pocket so that when it happens to you in the field, you write it down right now. What the conditions were, what the direction was. Sketch it. There's a little pad with graph paper there where you can sketch it so you have scale. Things like that.
I've actually seen this before.
And then it blew my mind that out of the paranormal community, out of the cryptid community, this had never been made.
Yeah.
You know? Well, and when I went to go look for laboratory manuals, you know, where it's like, there's got to be a laboratory manual out there that I can copy from. There's not.
How about
there's not a unified laboratory manual for
how to collect trace evidence?
Yeah.
There's not a guide on it. You know, there's not a step by step on how to. You know? Yeah, it's smart that you did.
So, like I saw the need for that and made it because it's one of those. There are so many people out there that, you had an experience out in the woods. Did you write it all down? You know, the example I give is as photographers and videographers, we hear all the time, a picture is worth 1,000 words. No, a picture is worth 1,000 words to somebody who's been in the similar circumstances, the picture.
Absolutely.
You take a picture of a wedding to a 4-year-old who's never been to a wedding, you're going to have some explaining to do about what's happening in that picture.
And that's why we document it all.
That's it.
You have to document, because your memory is only, you know, it's not always going to remain as sharp as it once was.
That's right. And that's
the only way you're going to remember something verbatim is if you wrote it down, if you have it down in black.
Yeah, precisely. And that's just it. You know, there are shows out there like The First 48, stuff like that, where they literally show you that if police don't get information in the first 48 hours, that case may never be solved.
Solves. That's absolutely correct.
You know, the first 48 hours, if you don't get witness statements, all of that within the first 12 hours, that starts deprecating people. And especially when you're talking about something like this, you know, whenever you're talking about a topic like this, Anthony, whenever you're talking about sightings, like what's on our screen right here, the drones, that kind of stuff, these things will make you question your very reality.
Absolutely.
And by the time 2 hours has gone by and you've gotten back to camp or whatever, at that point, you've already started processing this through your filter of belief, through all kinds of filters in your mind. So you've already started corrupting the scientific data.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. You're absolutely right.
Man, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight. I want to have you on again and again and again. To talk about this kind of stuff, because it to me, especially as we move forward with this conversation, it is important for us to firmly keep 2 feet on the ground while our head is in the clouds and our eyes are on the skies. Anthony,
indeed, well said. Yes, sir.
It is absolutely essential, and the work that you and Robert are doing, especially that triangulation work. If you have friends in another state, if you have friends on the other side of the city, start doing this, you know?
We just actually, we added a third partner in now who's in Long Island, my friend Michael. So it could be an official triangulation, just not the two of us. Now it's an official triangulation.
Nice.
Where if it comes from Long Island to Staten Island, and if we get fortunate enough and then it hits Jersey, now that would be something to talk about. Now.
That's incredible.
That's next. So, and you know what? As more and more people hear about it, more and more people are contacting me with interest. As a matter of fact, this upcoming summer, I'm doing a big call to Skywatch. I want everybody to come meet me out on the beach. I have a private beach behind my home, and we're going to do a giant Skywatch this summer. Everybody's going to bring up their equipment. And whoever catches something, we'll set it up and we'll do one big mini doc with all the stuff we collected. That's the next mission to put together.
That is so awesome, man. That's so awesome. And that's, you know, building community around this kind of stuff is it's what makes people comfortable with being able to share their stories, their experience.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that is where science starts. The only it starts with observation. Science starts with observation. And the only question is whether or not after your observation of something, whether or not you've hopped on the train of science with a ticket.
That's right.
That's the only question.
And, you know, another important thing to remember as new ufologists, some new ufologists may come out of this very program. Never knock somebody's story or encounter.
That's right.
Because that's their story. You weren't there to witness what they went through. So never knock it. Just take it. Keep what you want and you know, let whatever else you don't want go. But never knock them. And remember this. If you're not looking up, you're not looking out. So
well, that's right.
Please remember that.
That's right. You know? There is no bad data. Bad data in any data set. It's all usable data. So
yes,
even somebody's experience, even if proven to be something else, it's the fact of, you know, experience is once again where science starts. Without the experience, there's nothing. Without the apple falling on Newton's head, we don't have gravity. Doesn't exist, but we ain't got a theory of it, because the dude that thought of it happened because of an observation. An apple fell on his head. from there, he hopped on the train of science, you know? So I want to thank you for staying on the train of science, Anthony, and for doing everything that you do. We talked to Anthony last week when the whole drone kerfuffle started, and we had him on, and we were talking about it. And since then, things have just lit up. They've gone crazy all over the place, Anthony. And your video, which you shared with us, has gone viral. Literally, you were saying YouTube was saying that views are in the bees, in the billions, as far as social shares, things like that. And the reason that we're having you back on now, many of you may be like, why is this guy on in two segments? The first interview that you saw was Wednesday's interview. Okay. So you're going to see the original interview first. Then you're going to see this, which we literally did this morning. Like, this is 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning. And I got a hold of Anthony this weekend and I was like, my God, man. Things have gone crazy over the weekend. Theories, hypotheses, all kinds of stuff. Even this morning, the article being released, from Daily Mail and Guardian, things like that about, active radioactive material missing in the area. Now, granted, folks, when you see the headlines and you see, radioactive material in Jersey, what they're talking about is germanium-68. Germanium-68 is used specifically for calibrating machinery, calibrating CAT scans, things like that, calibrating Geiger counters, that kind of stuff. It's not like dirty plutonium from Three Mile Island that's missing, or, you know, a box of goodies like in Back to the Future. This is a small thing. The radiation from it, yes, you can get radiation sickness, but it's literally sickness. You will not get any cancers, nothing like that. It will be nausea, headaches, that kind of stuff. Go ahead, Anthony.
I was just saying it's very low yield.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And very low risk also.
It's not weapons grade.
Yeah, precisely. Right. It's something that even if you built a dirty bomb, let's put it this way, folks, the radioactive half-life on it is 271 days. So that's pretty small grade. And even the fact of if somebody built a bomb and dispersed it, it would be like, hey, don't go near that by 200 yards for the next year. You know, it would be pretty small impact. So it's nothing like that. But it does give an idea as to what some of these drones might be used for, what they might be looking for. But at the same token, there are active hearings going on right now. As we speak, they are up on the Curious Realm videos page, folks, curiousrealm.com/videos. You can watch it right there. There is the active hearing going on as we speak. The subcommittee. Oh, that's the pandemic. Sorry. But the subcommittee hearing about these drones is on there right now. So it's one of those that, as we said in the episode last week that we recorded, guaranteed. You heard about these things. You heard them say on a public platform at the UFO UAP hearing that we have holes in our security system. We have holes in our systems of observation and detection above sensitive areas. Then we start seeing massive drones. And like I said, guaranteed, the next thing is a subcommittee hearing on funding. And that is exactly what's happening today. And you're hearing things from like the FBI. Where they took them to task. What is your mitigation budget? You know, like, so, basically detection hardware. What is it for RF control guns where you can point a electronic shotgun and bring the drone down safely? $500,000.
$500,000.
Their total annual budget for such things. So
nothing.
You want to talk about an admission of a gaping weakness.
Yeah.
There it is. So your videos, Anthony, once again, have been getting worldwide attention, specifically the one that y'all made, a CGI one, which is what brought this to come back, because it's a great example, that we talk about regularly, that we talked about in our last episode, people's tendency and proneness to share without reading, to look at the even people's proneness to take a video and strip things off the beginning of it, like a CGI warning, things like that.
Right. No permission from the owner. They just take what they want and they upload it. And the level of false information that comes from that is mind-boggling. From news agencies that took it, that didn't ask permission, and they actually put it up all over the world as if drones were being shot down in New Jersey by regular civilian homeowners. Just today, it had made the Daily Mail?
Yeah.
Put it up. They used our video. And then they discussed, 50 drones flying over, and another reporter that filmed the gunfire happening at the drone, which is totally nonsense. I had to literally email them this morning and basically threaten a takedown order and a retraction. It's just lunacy.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And the idea that that a news agency is passing that off as footage that they shot, or that their person took on location, that's major stuff. It's not like, somebody took your video, as we talked about pre-show the other day, where I've had videos taken on YouTube, things cut, put together, and then somebody posts it somewhere else. And it's like, just share my video so that I get more views. Timestamp it to start there,
Right. And then people have the audacity, like, I had to reach out to like 100 different channels on YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the major ones whose name, I'm not going to mention, it's private matter between them and I, but, you've got 3 million views on it. You did not put the CGI disclaimer up, which is clearly written all over the video.
Yep.
You did not mention the two creators that, did the work for this or the channels. You just took it and used it as if it was your own. And that's so disrespectful. They had the audacity to be like, oh, why did you send me a takedown notice? Why do I got to take this down? What on this video is yours?
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it,
Yeah.
And
no,
all
precisely.
Their channels crop it and take our logo off, the Drone Hunter logo. And they put their own media outlet on it, all these different agencies, as if it was theirs. It's crazy.
Well, and the main thing is, once again, the reposting it without the CGI warning, because the CGI warning, not only that you had at the beginning, but that you have to post on YouTube. Like there is a checkbox component now that says this has not been edited to deceive.
Correct.
And this has not been CGI or AI generated.
Right.
So those are two major violations from YouTube right there. Just the fact of you're posting it as though it's real and it's fully not real.
Correct.
And that's just it. When you're talking news agencies doing such things, posting it and saying that like in a drop in an article, this is some of the danger that we talk about regularly on this show, Anthony, the race to a headline.
That's the problem today. Everybody needs to get there first. Nobody can take that extra 5 minutes of due diligence to make sure, everything's in the order it needs to be in. Well, contact the owner. I would have gave anybody that wanted to use that video permission to use it with certain stipulations added that they had to, make sure the CGI warning was up and stuff of that nature.
Yeah.
And they could have used it.
Yeah. But, you sent me the video.
Yeah,
you sent me all of the raw videos, hey, if you want to post these on your channel, post them up unadulterated, just give me credit, And I asked the same thing. I think any good creator asked the same thing, no different. And there are fair use policies in effect with media and stuff like that. As long as you are doing something for educational purposes to point things out, and as long as you are citing your source, you're pretty well covered. So as long as somebody was like, hey, here's a video taken in New Jersey and we're going to show you, what the drones look like. And this is the guy who posted it. Then you're pretty well covered with your usage.
Right.
And
another thing that really bothered me was, like I was saying, the cropping, how they cropped the video to cut out the parts, where you see who made the video and not contacting the channels involved. I mean, it's all over Twitter. It's all over Instagram. For every social media platform, it's on there. But the only YouTube channel that has it is mine right here. I am the only channel that's allowed to have this up. And the person that created with me, Robert Earl White from the channel The Order of Light, he is the drone hunter. That is a real drone you're looking at, but you're looking at an overlay of gunfire, trace around gunfire is just overlaid and sandwiched over the two videos. That's all that is.
Yeah.
And if people were smart, they would have realized that 2 days before we posted this exact video without the gunfire. So it's the same exact video from 2 days prior without the gunshots.
Yeah, with drone hunter on it and everything.
Yep.
And that's just it. You know, the idea of once again, stamping things with ownership, but also the way in which things just take over on social media, you know,
and like wildfire.
Well, and with frightening little consideration, Anthony, you know,
indeed.
Like once again, they take over like wildfire. There have been a couple of photos, a couple of videos that I've seen of things going on, that kind of stuff that just blow my mind. Like as a videographer, somebody who has some of this equipment, things like that. It just blows my mind that people post them and put them up. And, you know, once again, I will play the video that we played in that previous segment, that I recorded in my backyard that, yeah, if I just posted, hey, I recorded this orb in my backyard, you know,
You know what this reminds me of? The orb of light that's going around from Channel 7 right now that allegedly the media people filmed.
Thank you.
Very similar to that.
That's exactly what I keep saying, is that looks like every single bright light in the sky that's out of focus. This light specifically is the dog star Sirius, and there are a few stars out there like Sirius that twinkle in color, that kind of stuff. And a lot of that motion that you're seeing, the undulation around it, things like that, that's temperature inversion in the atmosphere. That's atmospheric distortion that you're seeing, folks.
Right.
Nothing more. And the big black hole in the middle is just the secondary lens of my telescope. The motion of it is just the actual rotation of the Earth, because my telescope hadn't been fixed to it yet. So once you know these things, you know, it's like, And there's a couple more where it's like, wow, that really looks like a drop of water on a lens with light being refracted in it.
It does.
You know, but for a news agency to throw it out there and just say orb captured, that's partly sensationalism, folks.
Right.
And you need to consider that as part of your data set.
That's what they do today for clicks and views. That's what it's all about. Major channel, and I mean major UFO channels had our video up as if it was real. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
That's really scary to think that they would put that, clearly knowing that it was CGI, to put that out and panic people like that. That really bothered Robert and I big time.
Oh, yeah.
Big time. And you and I were just talking about this in the previous show, how people do this. And not 2 days later, basically everything you and I discussed the last show happened 2 days later.
Exactly.
Crazy.
No, and that's why I'm back to backing them. That's why I'm back to backing them, because it's like, we called this. We called this last Wednesday.
Sure,
we recorded this. We recorded this the day after broadcast last week. So it's been almost a week. And we, like, you could go through what we recorded, and every single thing we said has come to fruition, Anthony. And that's even more disturbing.
Right down to big drones flying over people's houses. That Saturday morning, that big drone flew over my house, that quadcopter. I couldn't believe the size of it. It was massive. Then the NYPD gets one that was down in the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Yep.
Well, they're out there. There are these drones out there. It's definitely happening.
Yeah.
But not in the abundance that people are saying, because a lot of people are putting out a lot of false narratives. A lot of people are filming regular aircraft in the sky. The condensation trails that you see in the sky happen every day. Planes leave condensation trails. These drones are not spraying any chemicals. They're not shooting at people. They're not dropping missiles. That's all nonsense, so people can get clicks and views and ratings. That's all that is. It's hogwash.
Yeah. And you know, one of the videos that I was talking about comes from TikTok. Here's the actual video here of the the colorful orb that's knocked out of the sky by an orange orb. And if you notice, like, right, even the trees there are out of focus, folks. Mm-hmm. There is nothing about this image that's in focus. It talks about it being shot with a 600 millimeter lens, you know, 600 millimeter Nikkor lens and high definition. Nothing here is in focus at all. Not objects in the foreground, not objects in the background. Now, here's a prime example. Let me show you right here. Let me bring up this image that I have on my desktop. This is shot by yours truly in my backyard with a 600 millimeter lens. This is Jupiter and its four largest Galilean moons. This is what you can do with an in-focus 600 millimeter lens, folks. I was able to capture the moons of Jupiter within 30 seconds. So
very sharp.
There's a little bit there that could probably be a little rounder, things like that, as an astrophotographer. Now, this was 2022. So 2 years down the road, my skills are 89 times better.
However, you took shots of space with that.
Yeah.
These objects were in our own atmosphere. Yeah. What? A football field away airplane, from the person shooting it?
Airplane height, something like that. But you can't get the light into focus.
With a telephoto lens, you should be able to count the bolts on that thing.
Seriously. Yeah. There may be some shake in there because of your tripod or whatever. But at the same token, you should be able to get that object in focus.
Absolutely. Made in China, you should be clearly on that thing.
Yeah, I can see coloration and colors on aircraft whenever I'm taking pictures of them, you know, like probably tail numbers if I really focus. But the fact that that's being posted and making the rounds and everywhere, man, disturbs me as an investigator, because it's one of those we need to expect better than that. We need to be willing to, like we said in the last segment, Anthony, I'm all about the red circles, but we need to accept the explanation of the known quantitative within the red circle whenever it's called out,
That's right.
And even the fact of, you know, like, oh my God, these are aliens. Like, there's been more and more of that. And it's like, no, everybody says it's drones. Every agency says it's drones.
Right.
Even the announcement this morning from DHS. Let me pull that up. There it is, right there. That said, we recognize the concern among many communities. They were talking about the fact that these are all known quantitatives. Everything inside of these things is a known quantitative. Here is the actual, let me bring that up real quick. Let me find it. Where's it at? Here it is. There we go. There's the DHS, FBI, FAA, DOD joint statement. So this is every alphabet agency in charge, you know, talking about more than 1 million lawful drones. You know, the FBI's received more than 5,000 sightings, more than 100 leads generated. But having closely examined the technical data and tips from concerned citizens, we assess that the sightings and date include a combination of lawful commercial drones, hobbyist drones, law enforcement drones, as well as manned fixed-wing aircraft, helicopters, and STARS, mistakenly reported for drones. We have not identified anything anomalous and do not assess the activity to date to present a national security or public safety risk over the civilian airspace in New Jersey or other states in the Northeast. So, from their official website, you know, and once
nobody
again,
will fight that though, because everybody wants the uproar that it's drones and UFOs and they stole radioactive material and they're building a dirty bomb. That's what the hype is all about.
It is.
That's how our views are coming from.
Well, and you know, that's just it. You know, once again, folks, this show, the course of this show and the reason for Curious Realm is to demystify these topics. So many of these topics are thick and nebulous. And if so many people, unfortunately, Anthony, do not read a rainbow of news, you know, they don't read two sources from outside the U.S. They don't read two sources from inside the U.S. that politically disagree with them, you know, and that's what's important, to get a balanced point of view. Is to look at everything and to take in all parts of the data set.
Absolutely. Listen, when I get up in the morning, I look at everything. I go to Metabunk, see if Mick West debunked anything and how he did it and why he did it. I go to the Black Vault and check out John Greenwald, what he's got going on with all the FOIA requests. You know, you have to have your finger on the pulse when you're an independent journalist on YouTube or any other social media platform, and you're going to be discussing these things with the masses, right? Because one day you put a UFO up and, you know, 8 hours later, it's already debunked. So it's very important that you got your information correctly and you cited a couple different sources where you got that information from.
Nobody does that.
They just want to get that up there immediately. Yeah. The video hits the internet, boom, it hits everybody else's page at the same time. It's just insanity.
This is why we
come into problems like this with our drone hunter video.
Yeah, precisely. Where you posit the video itself as a hypothesis, you know, very beginning, and people just skip past that and start screen recording.
They took what they needed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, precisely.
We literally had to go live for an hour and discuss, Robert and I, why we did this, what the purpose was behind it. It wasn't to go viral. We literally put this together. I had enhanced the video, the original.
Yep.
And then Robert put the gunfire over it and sends it to me in the morning, and I start cracking up laughing. The first words out of my mouth were, "You took shots at this thing, you maniac."
"No." See, even you fell for it. Even you fell for it.
Sure did. He sent it to my phone. I'm looking at it on my phone. I was cracking up laughing. He's like, "No, you idiot." He's like, "I edited the gunfire over." I'm like, "Oh my god, this is so funny. We got to put this up." And the next words out of my mouth were, "You have to add a CGI disclaimer because you don't want the FBI knocking on your door."
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, and guaranteed.
Like, of course, I'm putting a disclaimer on it. Yeah. Yes. As a matter of fact, you write the disclaimer up, Andy. You're good at that stuff. So I wrote this whole thing up, and we did that. And that was it, man. It was off to the races from there. But I found it so funny because everybody was saying to shoot them down. I thought it would be hilarious to put that up.
Well, I mean, being from Texas, that's what all the Texas memes were like, hot dog, target practice time.
And another thing that really bothered me with the guns that actually take these drones down, those plastic microwave guns actually lower them to the – they're only $3,000. They are not expensive.
You can build one.
If this was a real world problem and the government really wanted this handled, they would be shipping truckloads of those guns to every police department within the United States. Every cop would have one in their unit. And I'm an ex-cop, so I know.
Yeah.
Every unit would have had one of these things, and cops would have been lowering them down.
That was quite literally quite a bit. For about 30 minutes, that was the conversation on the panel, because they have somebody from Customs and Border Patrol there. You know, because, of course, all this is happening right over the Jersey shipyard, you know, Customs and Border Patrol's right there. And they were saying that, you know, unfortunately, local municipality isn't allowed to get this stuff.
Right. The government has to give it to you.
And when the government themselves has a $500,000 budget for such things,
they can't afford to give it to you.
And even then they were talking about the fiber optic drones, the fact that there are now drones, and this right here is from Forbes in March this last year. Russian built fiber optic drone beats any jammer. So you want to know why they aren't detecting a signal? This is a pre-programmed drone being operated via fiber optic.
Have you come up with any information on, like, Fort Earl Naval Weapons Station, that the airspace got swarmed the other day by drones, and the Coast Guard cutter that got the 13 drones that was over the Coast Guard, and the cop that seen the 50 drones coming off the ocean? What are those drones, and why are they operating? Has anything come in report-wise?
That's just it. There seems to be a mix of these things, Anthony. There seems to be a mix of the drones that are very specifically used for searching for the radioactive material, like we were talking about. There seems to be a mix of different types of drone technology being used. And yeah, that's been the question. Is it for an adversary? Is it what's going on with it? You know, and some of the question that even came to the Customs and Border Patrol was smuggling things across, you know, things like that. And of course, a lot of what they said was a lot of that comes down to carriage capacity, you know, and a lot of drones, just aside from their drone weight itself, don't have a lot of carriage capacity to say, like, carry thing in, yeah, carry anything more than a kilo or two of cocaine.
But that's a yet.
Yet.
That's yet. Yet.
And there are larger carriage capacity drones out there. There are carriage capacity drones out there that have like 50 cal guns mounted to them. They have missiles mounted to them, all kinds of like, there are actual war platform drones. But that was also another part of the conversation, was a lot of what's going on in the Ukraine right now. And the idea of the drone technology that's being used by Ukraine, where it ain't multi-million dollar technology that they're using to take down a multi-million dollar warship or submarine, you know, using drones, that kind of stuff. So
regular commercial grade drones that any civilian can buy, nevertheless.
Yeah.
They're attaching hand grenades to them and stuff like that, you know, even handguns to them. They're attaching and they're operating and they're working. They're being successful with that stuff. What really frightens me is you're going to see a lot more drones within the next 2 years. Amazon is going to be launching their drone system for packages. You have some beer companies that are going to be launching drones to do alcohol beverage deliveries. And you're going to just see a whole myriad of companies that jump on that bandwagon. And the skies are going to be littered with these things.
Yeah.
So the government's going to have to devise some kind of program where they can track and get a serial number off every one of these drones, so they can be literally tracked by radar, and we can know who's up, who belongs to, and if they're licensed to operate it.
That has already been proposed. That is already being pushed through, and that was part of the thing that they were talking about, was these systems are not fully in place yet, but there's already a program in place that all drones need to be broadcasting serial number, make, model, everything. No different than flight radar. Whenever you look at flight radar and you see, you know, a public airplane or something like that, you can see its destination, where it's going, its average speed, what its call sign is, all that kind of stuff.
Hey, anything publicly available. There's a business opportunity in there for us, Chris.
There is.
That's a business opportunity for us. We should jump all over that.
It's a big one, buddy. But in all sincerity, it's one of those, and it's kind of been the Wild West with it,
it
you
is.
Know, like we're sure. right here in Texas, in Austin, we are a tech capital of the world. We have embedded at University of Texas the Army School of Future Warfares, where they're using drone technology and, you know, building small drone swarms on the top of UT towers and stuff like that. Like there's a big netted facility where they're working on AI drone technology and small drone swarms, things like that. So this is full on the future of warfare, no doubt.
Have you seen the miniature drone technology where they attach a small little explosive device into this drone, which is the size of a small bug? And that small drone has a camera. They can program it to facial recognition to find exactly who they're looking for. That drone, they throw it, it takes off, and it, when it gets close to the target, it blows up right in your skull.
Wow.
Have you seen that yet?
I have not, but I can't imagine that they aren't out there. And once again, that was there you go.
That's just one question.
And you know, there's, my God, man, there's the whole birds are fake thing, which I'd love to say isn't hilarious, but it's absolutely based on fact. There were plans years ago to make drones out of dead birds and stuff like that, and pack them full of explosive or pack them full of surveillance package. And hey, there's just a pigeon flying through the sky, but.
If you would be so kind, look up CS Consulting.
Okay.
Micro drones killer arms robot. You really want to get frightened at what's coming?
This is the kind of stuff I'm all about. Because it, you know, that's just it. People really don't understand what some of these things are all about. Oh my, looky here.
Check this out.
So, yeah.
It allows you to separate the bad guys from the good. It's a big deal. But we have something much bigger.
Oh, I have seen this.
Your kids probably have one of these, right? Not quite. Hell of a pilot? No. That skill is all AI. It's flying itself. Its processor can react 100 times faster than a human. The stochastic motion is an anti-sniper feature. Just like any mobile device these days, it has cameras and sensors, and just like your phones and social media apps, it does facial recognition. Inside here is 3 grams of shaped explosive. This is how it works.
This is disturbing.
What's this?
Did you see that? That little bang is enough to penetrate.
I'm more worried about them flying over my house than the big ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Feel free to crush my car all day. That's what I have insurance for. But yeah, shit. That kind of stuff is disturbing. And it's that is a lot of what they were talking about today in the hearing is, you know, the fact of there are AI drones, there are drones piloted by AI, things like that. So your average RF gun isn't going to handle them. It isn't going to do anything because there's not an RF controlling it. It's pre-programmed and it's intelligent to avoid obstacles, to stay on target, to do whatever it needs to do, you know? So that is right here. It's available. This stuff is out there now. So it's
amazing.
Pretty fascinating to look at, Anthony. Now with the videos, things like that, with people responding to videos, how have the community's been responding overall to your other videos, to the videos of all the other drones, things like that?
My channel, thank God, is doing very well. And everything I put up, thank God, right now is doing very well. The regular drone videos are doing well. The drone video that I had put up that flew over the house, I don't even know where it's at right now. View at 2.9K. So it's doing pretty good on there.
And that is a massive drone too. That thing is just
that's a quadcopter. And you hear it too. Like if you put the audio on when it first starts, like you really hear what these things sound like. Cause it was only like 50 feet over my house. I got a really crystal clear look at this thing. I wish I had my good camera to really zoom in on this, but it was 6 o'clock in the morning. I was feeding the dog. I ran out with my phone. Look at it.
Wow.
Look at this thing.
Listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a lawnmower going.
Yep, very loud.
And you can see, especially with its proximity to you, and just for the size of reference of a street light and its proximity to you, you're looking at about something that's a foot and a half. That thing's easily the size of the room that I'm sitting in. Drone. It's smooth, 10 feet by 10 feet.
Easily, I estimated the size like of a VW bug.
Yep.
Small VW bug, Mini Cooper, something in that range. That's about as big as that was. And they are out there. It is happening. But, there's not millions of them up in the sky. Not every blinking FAA light that you see in the sky is one of these drones. They're under the 400-foot altitude ceiling. So that's where you're really looking for these things. I would say anything above 600 feet is just regular air traffic. Yeah. I would count that as Cessnas, helicopters, passenger jets, anything below that 600-foot ceiling, you can probably target as one of these drones.
Yeah, and there has been a video of that floating around, just the air traffic over New Jersey with everything, time-lapsed and stuff like that and moving.
Yeah, you see that all day long.
This is LaGuardia. What are you
– Right.
Like,
right. I actually went out on the beach because right across from me is, like I said, Fort Earl Naval Weapons Station that had the drone swarm go over the SB. Then LaGuardia and JFK and a couple of private Cessna airports. And I just went live on Facebook showing people, look, this big light you see coming, that's not a drone. That's a plane on approach. You're looking at the headlight. This is a Cessna, like trying to get people to understand what the air traffic looks like. Yeah. And I thought that was important to do because people are just saying that, you know, regular contrails on planes are they're spraying things, and that's false. That's false information.
Yeah.
There you go. There's the gun right there.
Yep. It
takes them down.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And that's just it. Like, the technology's out there, and to know that the people in charge with of law enforcement in our country, the main law enforcement agency in our country, the FBI, allocates $500,000 a year to that technology when quite literally a drone was used by the kid that tried to assassinate Trump.
For aerial surveillance and reconnaissance.
So like he flew a drone over the area 2 hours before he took the shots.
That's right.
So you'd think it'd be a little more on radar as far as technology we need to invest in, like right now, you know?
There's so much room. I'm always got new ideas and businesses running through my head. Just as we're talking, I thought of 10 new businesses. Somebody can open up a business that tracks drones privately and you can subcontract to the government. You would be a billionaire. Billionaire doing that now because they don't have it. They don't have it.
Yeah.
You know, it's an open field.
Well,
it's
and crazy. To loop this right back to the beginning and right back to the beginning of our last one with, with the hearings and the fact of like guaranteed we heard at a UFO UAP hearing that we had weaknesses in our surveillance and observation platforms.
Right.
And detection platforms over sensitive areas. So, and this is just how funding works. It's just how it works, folks. So it wasn't rocket math for me to be like, you know, what's next is a public hearing talking about funding and solutions for this. And lo and behold, there it is happening like 3-4 days
in real time. Yeah.
You know, in real time unfolding because, you know, we said that publicly and now we're saying this publicly. And now even more people like ISIS and things like that know like, oh, holy crap. They've only got $500,000 worth of tech?
Well, they're not as strong as we thought they were. Yeah, let's take our chances.
Like, yeah, exactly. You know? It's like
you now is the time to spend the money for infrastructure and to really secure everything you need to secure. But you already found out the weakness. Now plug the holes and dump money there. Instead of spending billions of dollars in other countries to help them right now, we need to secure our borders.
It seems that way.
That's where the money needs to be.
It seems that way. And, you know, it's one of those I've got the southern border right down the road. And even John Eric Egge, the new MUFON state director, said that when he went down to a MUFON meeting in Edinburgh, which is down near the Mexican border, got to go through a couple of checkpoints to get there.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of stateside checkpoints. And he was like, I was stopped at the checkpoint and we had a conversation about like, what are you here for? He's like, oh, I was here speaking at a UFO conference, you know, for MUFON. And they started asking him about all the drones that they see in night vision and what those are about. He's like, we see all kinds of drones down here. We don't know what the hell they are. You know what's up with them? And then he got pulled over for speeding by a state trooper just a little while later.
Yeah.
And he asked him, he was, oh, what are you doing? Told him where he was come from. He's like, really? UFOs? What's up with all these drone reports that we get all the time? So, yeah.
I'll tell you why people, you know, just my theory, my Go hunch, ahead. Why I think people are misconstruing the drones and the UFOs. Because a lot of ufologists are saying that a lot of these drones are unmanned aerial vehicles of extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yeah.
Which I agree with, because the same way we send, you know, our drones to Mars and everything, our rovers, could be the same way they're doing that. And I think that's why a lot of these UFO people are seeing that and they're like, these must be, you know, the drones that they're talking about, the unmanned extraterrestrial vehicles. Then you got like Dr. Greer. and Billy Carson on there telling the world that this is a PSYOP and they're getting ready to, you know, launch these unmanned extraterrestrial vehicles, but they're really only the ones that the government has that are reverse engineered, and the government's going to do some crazy, you know, things to us within the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye open. That you're causing mass hysteria. You know, Dr. Greer has millions of followers. Billy Carson, millions of followers. You're giving bad information to the masses. I do not agree.
It is dangerous. It's dangerous, you know, and it's one of those. I worked with a host in my career that just stated things as fact, Anthony.
Yeah, you can't.
And that's dangerous. I will, and my audience knows, I will always privy things with, this is my educated opinion. According to everything I have read, this is what I have come to. This is what I think. This is my hypothesis. All kinds of things, but it is rare. It is rare that I will take something, especially something as bold as that, and lay it down as fact that this is an absolute, that this is happening. And now, granted, I did lay down an absolute the other day to correct myself. And I was like, guaranteed what you're going to see next is a public hearing for funding.
And it happened. Everything we said the other day happened. I can't even believe it.
Everything.
Verbatim, it's going on.
Everything.
But I'll tell you what. Dr. Greer has been saying for the last 20 years that the military is going to run a PSYOP and false flag alien invasion. Yeah. And now this drone stuff is happening. And he's using that to cover his ass for what he's been saying for the last 20 years. Because he don't want his funding from his civilian sources to dry up either. So, you know, it all fits in, but you got to know where to look and how to look at it.
You do.
You know what I mean?
You do. And, you know, and once again, Anthony, not only do you have to know how to look at it, but you've also got to be willing to accept what's in the red circle.
Right.
You know, to once again bring this right back home where we were at the beginning of the original conversation, which is that understanding that the better understanding we have of the known quantitative, the less of the unknown we have to look at. It only leaves the unknown at that point. Yeah. Once you get enough of the known quantitative, the only thing left to examine now is the anomaly, you know?
Right.
So the thing is, though, you've got to be willing to accept the Occam's razor answer of what's in the red circle. You know?
Absolutely.
And even the explanation of, wow, you know, so you've got a 600 millimeter lens, you know, and your 600 millimeter lens doesn't keep things in focus inside the atmosphere, but you can capture the moons of Jupiter with a 600 millimeter lens on a standard camera, you know, no astrophotography camera, nothing like that. Like that's a Canon T3i, like that thing's almost 20 years old, that camera.
If somebody would have sent me that video and said this was shot with a 600 millimeter lens, it would have never made my channel the way it looked.
Yeah.
The orbs falling out of that thing. That's no. That yeah. it, no, it's crap.
Yeah.
That's no.
And
not happening.
And that's just it. You know, it's one of those, like, we have to be willing to look at those things. We have to be willing to look at the fact of, wow, everything in this picture is out of focus. How can you use any of that? You know, and even the one released by the ABC7 team that was the colorful orb and stuff
it
like
didn't
that.
Move.
Another one where it's like the camera is moving a lot. You
the
know,
the object doesn't move. It's stationary in dead center sky. It doesn't go anywhere. The camera operator might jerk a little bit, but that's it. So that could be anything. That could be anything.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And, you know, that is once again what I love about your videos, even the drone hunter video done specifically to show people what's actually out there and what people are doing to try to deceive things.
Right. Know? Can you pull that up for a second and open the more section, the disclaimer? I just want to show like what they left out. So if you go, like, see how I got, this is a real world scenario that could happen if people do not get answers. But this was a brilliant CGI example created by myself and my colleague, Robert Earl White from the channel, The Aura of Light. And then, you know, it goes right on to say in big bold letters, never shoot at a drone. This is CGI. Be safe. Call 911. Never take matters. You know, how do you leave that all out? It just boggles my mind.
Every bit of it. Every bit of it, you know?
Crazy. And,
those are the dangerous things out there, though. You know, those are the caveats that are out there that unfortunately sensationalism wins the day online, man. I remember, I guess it was a couple of elections ago, Denzel Washington was at a red carpet event and somebody cornered him about something politically. And he was like, I don't know where you got that. I never said that.
I love Denzel. Like,
well, you know, somebody said you said this. He's like, see, there's the problem. You know, you're out busy chasing. You're out busy chasing for a headline.
Yeah, right. Nobody vets their sources.
Nobody
saying similar things to what we
called me to actively ask me if I said that.
You know? I know exactly what you're talking about, that video.
And that's just it. Like, all you have to do is actively contact the creator, much like we pointed out with the mothership picture from Lou Elizondo. It did not take John Greenwald more than 5 minutes of putting the picture into Google and doing a reverse image search.
That's all you have to do. Easiest thing in the world to do, reverse image search, pull up anything you need. And not only that, you know what really pisses me off more than anything about this all? You know who Ross Coulthard is, right? From News Nation? Okay. Well, he got fired a couple of years ago from his main job for putting out false stories. The minute that this story started getting traction on X, he put it right up on his channel. And I reached out to him and told him, man, this is CGI. You didn't reach out to the source. The same thing I've been saying this whole time. You know, and then he took it down. But like you would think somebody that already got fired once for putting up fraudulent stories would have really did his homework and really vetted it to make sure it was real before he put it up. Nope, he just did it again because it's all about the almighty dollar for these people. Clicks, views, how much attention it can get, what they can use it for. That's all they care about. That's all they care about. They don't care about mass hysteria and what's real or fake. If it looks good and it's going to make money, it goes up. That's the way that works. They worry about the consequences later on.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And it's one of those, unfortunately, it is the chase for headline. Because when you, as somebody who worked in mainstream news and sideline news and alternative news, it's the fact of if you sit and you watch, doesn't matter if it's Fox, MSNBC, you know, red, blue. If you watch them all day long, you will see the same five stories.
Over and over again. It's all regurgitated media. That's all it is.
And it's no different in the print media. The only difference is they change the headline. They change the headline and there may be an update. Or they'll be like, you know, we're still waiting for updates. But they basically just rewrote the exact same story and re-released it with a new headline.
Exactly.
Excuse me, folks. It's a little bit zazzier because the last one didn't metric out well or somebody came in and stomped on their traffic with the exact same data, the exact same story with a different angle and a snazzier headline.
Right.
So, yeah. And it's and here is the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission from actually event notification report December 13th, talking about the National Cancer Center in New Jersey and their loss of that material. So source lost in transit right there. So we're talking about that germanium 68 at the beginning of the episode, but that is the actual event report right there from the National Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So yeah, like that is an active thing. It's happening.
Is there a way to send you something in real time?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Send it to me.
Messenger?
Yeah. Send it to me in Messenger.
All right. Cause I want to show you the thing Ross Coulthard put up from News Nation about this video we did.
Okay.
And thank God I had the conscious mind to take a snippet of it.
Right.
Because I know how these people operate. You know, I had said the minute X puts the community notes on the bottom, because Robert community noted himself because he'd been panicked that the FBI was going to visit us because of this. So he community noted himself so it could say it linked back to the original source and all that.
Yeah.
And once that happened, you know, he took it right down to cover his butt.
Yeah.
But people need to see, you know, like it really happens, how the fake news spreads, who spreads it. It's
that's
sickening.
It. That's it. And it's out there. It's all over the place, Anthony. And I find it destructive to communities. I find it no less destructive to communities than very slanted documentaries like the one that we covered about the Manhattan alien abduction and about how that was basically just a hit piece on Bud Hopkins' work by his angry ex-wife, you know, which calls into work. Yeah.
I'm good friends with Linda Napolitano, and she's like one of the most trustworthy people in the world. She's a sweetheart. She really is. I mean, Parrish de Cuellar, who was in charge of the United Nations at that time, witnessed this with his security detail. I doubt at that time, back then, nobody was really into UFOs like they are today. It was more taboo.
No.
Somebody like that's not stepping forward as a witness unless it actually happened and really scared him.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And the fact of the fact that there was no, it's not like you were having documentaries made about you back then, or that you were getting, she got a few interviews, things like that, you know, so did Bud, that kind of stuff. But it was nothing that like was life changing monetarily. In that kind of way.
I know Linda for years, and I've asked her for years to come on my show. She doesn't like it. She doesn't like being in the spotlight. You know what I mean? Like that. She's not into that. She's not one of those people that do it for the monetary reasons at all, or notoriety. She did it because it was something that happened to her, and it really changed her life.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. Precisely. I'm bringing up that message from you right now. Give me just a second here. I had to forward it on to my private avatar.
You got it.
But there it is right there.
Here it is, Ross Colehart. A crazy, insane idea to shoot at an airborne object over a crowded civilian area. It's a very serious criminal offense. Please do not do this. But in the absence of credible information from the government, the public may react in panic.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And underneath that is the video where it's cut off. Yeah, you can see all the way at the bottom. He's got the video there as well that he shared without permission, Ross.
But,
you know, again, it's just what they do.
Well, and, you know, that I think in all honesty, there is a lot of sharing of videos without permission to begin with from YouTube channels, things like that. The question comes to bear, once again, if you are misrepresenting what's in the video, if you haven't read the comments that are in the video, the notes that are in the video, the more section that actually explains what the video is about, that kind of stuff. And then you're passing it off as something else, you know?
Right.
And that's just it. Like even Mike Turber got that video off Twitter.
Oh yeah. It spread like wildfire. It was everywhere. It's very hard.
His source was Twitter. Yeah. And the Twitter source, not the original source, you. And as soon as I was like, hey, Mike, my buddy Anthony made that video. And then you chimed in and he was like, oh, my God. Like, wow. But that's exactly how quick that happens.
Right. That happened to a lot of people. It's not Mike's fault. You know, he took it from somewhere else that had it labeled as theirs, probably.
Yes, exactly.
And you know, it's not his fault.
Yeah.
But back to the point, you know, one big UFO channel that took it from me is a channel I do not get along with, that Third Phase of Moon that puts a lot – Third Phase of Moon?
Yeah.
They do a lot of hoax stuff. And matter of fact, a big documentary is coming out about them. But not to talk bad about them. They stole it from me. And I got in touch with them. I was like, you got to take this down. I don't want anything I made on your channel. You know, they took it down. But what really frightens me the most is that channel works with Dr. Greer. Works with Billy Carson, works with all the big name ufologists. And if they're sharing fake stuff and portraying it as real, that really means people need to go back and look at everything else that they say is real and really quadruple vet that stuff. Okay. Because if they're willing to share things like that and tell you it's real, God only knows what else on their channel is BS that you can prove if you really look into it. You know what I mean? And that's how these things happen.
Yeah, no, precisely. And it's the fact of, we trust sources. We trust people. We trust people that we resonate with, Anthony. Right. And you know, much like we said about Lou Elizondo, not only with you, but with Earl Grey and with Mike Turber, it's the fact of at what point do you stop the research? You know, at what point do you prima facie accept anything that a source gives you, you know, and just go with it. Just send it. Boom. They gave it to me. Awesome. It's good.
You can't. Look what happened to Dolan.
You shouldn't.
Yeah. Look what happened to Dolan. He had that old man come up to him, tell him he used to work for the CIA, and he had the, you know, he spoke to one of these real aliens. Turned out that the guy had mental illness. He was like half on his deathbed. He made this story up about the aliens. He never worked for the government before. Meanwhile, Richard Dolan put that whole story out as if it was real, like he really interviewed a CIA officer that worked with extraterrestrials, and it was all fake. Because he trusted Linda Moulton Howe that gave him the story without vetting it, you know? And it happens all the time. It happens all the time. We're all human. We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the thing is, you've got to be willing to, like Mike Turber, like other news agencies that you've contacted and mentioned it to, you've got to be willing to retract that. You've got to be willing to backstep that and go, whoa, wait a minute. You know? I thought this was something, come to find out it's something else, you know?
Right.
And good on you. I'm a lot of people would maybe consider what you did with this video, to be, I guess, hit PC, so to speak, or even, you know, quote, trollish in this digital day and age. Anthony, I do not see it that way. I see it much like the video that I recorded of Sirius that I post places and things like that as a response to people.
Right.
I see it as instructional, and I see it as instructional in the fact of, not only how easy it is to put something like this together, literally overnight, just playing around and throw something together and put it up, and B, how easy it is for that to gain traction. In the world of actual news.
Right.
As real. Yeah. When it is stated completely and utterly in the original source that this is made. This is not real. This is not a real video. This is an example of what it would look like if some Yahoo brought out a gun with tracers and started shooting.
Right. You know, bringing us down to a point that we were trying to make. Is this what you want? Because those bullets go up. They have to come down.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
And if
that thing right there crashed, it's going to do a lot of damage. And not only that, you shoot at these things, you don't know what payload they have attached to them.
That's right.
You don't know if there's chemical biological warfare on there. You don't know who it belongs to. It could be the FBI. It could be the government. You bring that thing down, never mind the damage. But then you're going to have to worry about the jail time that's going to come along with it.
Yeah.
You know, people don't think like that. And I'm wondering right now, is this supposed to have, because I have checked on here that it's CGI on the YouTube. Aren't they supposed to put like a disclaimer under the video?
I believe so. If I'm not mistaken, how this content was made.
Oh,
right.
Edited or digitally altered. Oh, there you go.
There you go. Significantly edited.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. Significantly edited. So it's not like, you know, they just like took a snippet out. No. They did some work.
But you're telling me the YouTube algorithm couldn't figure out that video is on other channels and they're not adding that? That's what the algorithm's supposed to do, sniff those things out for copyright.
In theory.
And it didn't. In theory.
Yeah. Like I've gotten copyright notice on my own music that I'm registered to on
Who
my
hasn't?
Own channel.
So have I.
Yeah, but I mean on my own channel.
Where it's,
like, wait a minute. I'm streaming my own music on my channel and you're telling me there's a copyright violation?
Which tells me the media wanted that video to go through. That's how I look at it. They wanted that to reach masses because major outlets had it. Because YouTube, again, it comes down to the money.
Sure.
You know what I mean? They wanted those kickbacks for that.
Well, and you know, once again, there are alerts, folks. Whenever you see a video on YouTube, feel free to scroll down. I'm not saying that people are necessarily clicking that box, altered or synthetic content, but it's there now. Was your content created, used, or generated using AI? You know? So the checkbox is there. You're supposed to be responsible. But a lot of people aren't, you know, good folks like you are, good folks like Robert are. Thank you so much for coming back on the show, man, talking about this. It's so, I think, absolutely important to see both of these parts back to back.
I couldn't agree more.
Because it really is revealing to see the many day difference between the interviews. Yeah. To see the fact that, like everything we called in the first one all
definitely
came to fruition.
Watch episode every one and then go into two. You're going to be like, I can't even believe that just happened.
Yeah, back in my old days, there used to be a hashtag that we used, hashtag Dudes and Beer called it.
I like that.
Where we would talk about something in an episode, and within a week it would happen in the news, and we'd post the article and be like, hashtag Dudes and Beer called it.
Synchronicities, man.
It's interesting to see these trends. And once again, I can't wait to. I know we just said this a week ago, Anthony, but I can't wait to have you on again and again and again and again.
I love hanging out with you.
Truly,
man. It's good
truly
time.
A pleasure. Let everybody know where they can go to follow you, your work, where they can go to find Epic TV on social media, all that kind of good stuff, my friend.
Yeah, thank you for that. Again, Epic TV dash NY, Epic TV New York. We're on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, X. We're everywhere you could find us, and it's all the same name, Epic TV dash NY. So come hang out. TikTok just hit 111,000 followers.
God.
So we're really trending. I had Instagram for like a couple of years now, but I never used it. I had maybe like 200-300 followers on there. It's already over 2,000 followers already, just over the weekend.
Wow.
I mean, everything
good for you, man.
My ex, I just got ex like a month ago. It's like it had 8 followers on there last week when I opened it 2 weeks ago. Now it's like almost 600. I mean, it's amazing how fast the channels are growing. But that's from all the media coverage, thank God. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, you guys have once again been approached by countless media organizations for use of your video and for contacting you about what's going on in the area. Once again, I want to thank you for your time again, bud.
Thank you.
Hold the line real quick while we close things out. While you are online checking out everything from Epic TV New York on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, or on X, on all the socials, stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com/videos is where you can find all of our embedded YouTube channels, including the declassified government panels section, which does have the hearing from the New York drones today on it, as well as all of the channels from our guests right there for easy liking and following. You can also get your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log right there. That is put out by our research arm, Curious Research. That is your opportunity if you are a field investigator in the world of paranormal, cryptozoology, or UFO UAPs. This is a field log so that while you're out on investigation, you can write your data down as it happens, not like later when you get back to your house or your cabin or your camp. Write it down when it's fresh, write it down as it occurs. It's got all the scientific data sections there to be able to fill out. So stop on by, get your copy of that. Thank you so much, everybody, for your time tonight. It is your open hearts, your open minds that make the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media and Aftermath Media family of podcasts. For more great shows and members-only content, visit aftermath.media today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side.
is always watching.